And if you're looking for the ideal private room for your next party, look no further than Joe Rombi's La Piccola Casa and La Mia Cucina. Joe Rombi has three rooms that can accommodate groups of any size from 16 to 60. For unforgettable meals in a private setting at your place or theirs, call 373-8116 or drop by La Piccola Casa, 17th Street between Lighthouse and Laurel in Pacific Grove.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Chris Mavridis. He was the voice of the 1969 World Series on NBC.
There's a fly ball hit out to left, waiting is Jones. The Mets are the world champions.
That's Kurt Gowdy at the play-by-play mic.
Gary Kuzman being mobbed. Look at this scene.
Today, the legendary play-by-play man died of leukemia in Florida. He was 86. Kurt Smith is a sports author and says,
you couldn't watch network TV without seeing Gowdy in the 1960s and 70s. If there was a sports event, Gowdy did it. If he didn't do it, it wasn't a major event.
In the 50s and 60s, Gowdy was the voice of the Boston Red Sox and did play-by-play for the first ever Super Bowl. Kurt Gowdy was 86. All eyes in the sports world are locked on Torino these days. Today, medals for Americans on the ice.
This is Steve Futterman at the figure skating venue in Torino. Kenneth Belbin and Ben Augusto come through with a great performance in their free skate. It wasn't quite good enough to overcome the Russian pair who entered the free skate in first place, but the American pair ends up in second place, a silver medal for the first time since 1976. The U.S. wins an Olympic medal in ice dance.
There's no dancing around it for the president.
It creates a national security issue when we're held hostage for energy by foreign nations that may not like us.
That's why Mr. Bush is spending this President's Day touting his energy plan. Mr. Bush was in Milwaukee today visiting a plant that makes batteries for hybrid vehicles.
The role of the government at this point is to continue to spend research dollars to help push technologies forward, is to get these technologies to be even more competitive in the marketplace.
Pushing for more science initiatives in school to help develop the new energy alternatives. What to do with all those damaged or destroyed homes in Louisiana? The state's governor unveiled her plan today. Kathleen Blanco outlined a $7.5 billion plan to rebuild, relocate, even buy out homeowners. A chunk of that cash will come from Washington, but has yet to get the congressional okay. A natural disaster in the Philippines has claimed hundreds of lives. CBS's Barry Peterson says they're searching. Searchers are looking for survivors underneath all the dirt of last week's landslide, but are coming up empty.
Searchers focused on an area that may be the village school, where up to 300 children were in classes when the mudslide hit. Previous searches in the area have turned up only more bodies. Indeed, there is almost no way to identify the few bodies that are being found, a task usually done by friends or relatives. But with the whole village gone, there are no friends or relatives still alive.
As many as 1,800 people are missing and presumed dead in the landslide. Wall Street was quiet today. The markets were closed for the President's Day holiday. This is CBS News.
Where do you want to be?
Everybody has a different idea of the perfect home.
I'd love a little house in the country.
I want someplace close to my office.
It's essential that I live within the delivery zone of my favorite pizza parlor.
Find your perfect place. It's easy with RE/MAX. RE/MAX agents have the experience to make your dreams a reality. Visit RE/MAX.com today. Nobody sells more real estate than RE/MAX. Each office independently owned and operated.
What tobacco issues are important to you?
I know smoking is dangerous, and I've decided to quit.
Last night, Allison went to PhilipMorrisUSA.com.
Quitting won't be easy. Not for me, but I feel good that I've taken that first step.
If you're a smoker who's decided to quit, QuitAssist is an online resource that provides links to the information, advice, and support you're looking for. Find out more. Visit PhilipMorrisUSA.com.
Strike at Sikorsky Aircraft. Workers in Connecticut and Florida have walked.
It's the first time it's come to this in more than four decades. Machinists and craftsmen walking off the job. At headquarters here in Stratford, several dozen are blocking each gate.
What do we want? Help! What do we want? It?
But they're complying when police tell them to move to let traffic through. They say the company is putting too much of the health care burden on them. Sikorsky, which has billions of dollars in orders pending for commercial aircraft and Black Hawk helicopters, says it has contingency plans to stay operating during the strike. Chris Francis for CBS News, Stratford, Connecticut.
Okay, who here has lied on their resume, huh? All right, don't answer that. There are questions about the accuracy of one resume that has led to some serious drama. The CEO of Radio Shack said he had two college degrees, but records don't show that. Today, amidst all the questions, David Edmondson resigned as Radio Shack's top boss. He's got other problems, too, facing trial in Fort Worth for drunk driving. Chris Mavridi, CBS News.
Hi, Susie. Thanks for watching my kids.
Good timing. I'm making rich chocolate Ovaltine.
Ooh, my kids love chocolate milk.
So do mine, but I didn't make it for them. This Ovaltine's for us.
Really?
Hey, adults love the taste, too. Plus, I drink rich chocolate Ovaltine every day because it's high in calcium and antioxidants like vitamins A, C, and E. Ovaltine even has iron I need, which I can't get from Nesquik powder or milk alone.
Mmm, Ovaltine is good.
And it's loaded with vitamins and minerals. Nesquik powder doesn't come close.
More Ovaltine, please.
Kleenex presents Gold Medal Moments.
His first hockey game, I was so scared. Then he scored the winning goal. And of course he got a bloody nose during the celebration.
Thank goodness for Kleenex Tissue. Capture your child's moments by playing the Kleenex U.S. Olympic Gold Game. Details on specially marked packages or visit usgoldgame.com. You can win thousands of great prizes, including digital cameras.
I get all choked up just thinking about it.
Kleenex Tissue, proud supplier of 2006 U.S. Olympic Team. No purchase necessary. Legal residents of the U.S. 18 and older. Void where prohibited. Promotion ends 3506. Kimberly Clark Global Sales, Inc.
It's a party on the radio, and we're just getting underway. It's 3:06, and I'm Peter B. Collins. Yes, Progressive Talk for the Central Coast and the North Coast. We're live on KRXA 540, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. We're live on KGOE 1480, Eureka, Arcata, Humboldt County. It's a federal holiday. The kids are out of school. Some people are on the slopes today, but we're slaving away. Trying to save our country with doses of truth and a little humor when we can find it. On the program today, we're going to spend 90 minutes talking about what it's like for average people living under the occupation in Iraq. We have two guests. Rita Leissner is a photojournalist who is the co-author or co-contributor of a powerful photo book called Unembedded. She'll be with us starting at 3:30. She's going to stay for an hour, and we'll be joined by Mark Manning, who we interviewed briefly last week. He has a new film out called Caught in the Crossfire, about civilians in Fallujah, and he's going to be with us from 4 to 5. So if you get it, they'll overlap and share some conversation. Rita was present for the U.S. assault on Najaf, and Mark Manning was there for two of the assaults on Fallujah. Then it's our free speech zone at 5 o'clock. We open up the phones to see what's on your minds. And that reminds me, I like to give out the number so you can participate in the program at any moment when it occurs to you. 831-899-5792 on the Central Coast, or toll free at 1-888-579-2540. That puts you through to the Peter B. Collins Show. And every Monday we kick off the program with a representative of the great website Media Matters for America, mediamatters.org. And our media man today is Jameson Foser. J-Mo Foser joins us from Washington, D.C. It's been a very busy week monitoring the media, hasn't it, J-Mo?
Sure has, Peter.
And we're getting more and more post-mortem stories on the background information about why Dick Cheney managed his shooting incident the way he did. The New York Times has another analysis piece today. And they quote Mary Matalin, who was called at 8 a.m. on Sunday morning last week to try to stage manage the press coverage of the vice presidential accident. And it really has been fascinating to see how the media treats this. First up, I would like to say one thing positive about NBC White House correspondent David Gregory, because he really gave Scott McClellan a run for his spin money this past week, demanding real answers and, you know, an explanation as to why the White House handled it in the manner they did.
Well, he did, and there was a briefing last week that I think you're probably referring to, Scott McCollum press briefing last week, where McCollum basically wasn't answering any question, and Gregory went after him pretty good and kept trying to insist on getting his questions answered. And McCollum wouldn't do it, and at one point McCollum took a shot at Gregory, saying that pointing out that the cameras weren't rolling, this was an off-camera briefing, and that Gregory might want to save his questions for when the cameras were rolling, suggesting that David Gregory was just grandstanding, which led to a bit of a heated exchange, and Gregory basically told Scott McCollum he was being a jerk, which, you know, whether or not that was the right phrasing to use, he could probably make a pretty good case for it. The guy was basically saying that David Gregory was insincere in his questions and just trying to get attention.
Mm-hmm.
Gregory actually apologized for that on Meet the Press on Sunday. So,
oh, he did.
Interesting little sideline to the week's coverage.
Yeah.
I haven't seen McClellan yet apologize to Gregory, which is, you know, something that if I were David Gregory, I might have been looking out for before I made any apologies. But it's up to him.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting because, as I mentioned, there's been a story almost every day, mostly looking back and, you know, asking who did what, when, and why. And in Sunday's New York Times, they gave a pretty good review of the Armstrong Ranch and its history, the King Ranch, which is adjacent, and the way that has been a feeding trough for conservative Republicans and Texas operatives like Karl Rove and both Bush presidents and many others who have cronied up with the Armstrongs. And one of the things that was finally published in the Times yesterday that was first broken by a blogger who I'm very fond of, Brad Friedman at bradblog.com, was that Ann Armstrong was sitting on the board of directors of Halliburton at the time they named Dick Cheney CEO. Now, that's more than a minor detail, but it was not fully articulated, and even in the Times yesterday, they mentioned it in passing. They said that she had been a member of the Halliburton board, but didn't make that same connection that she was there when they hired Cheney.
Right. The Armstrongs and the Cheneys and the Armstrongs and Karl Rove are longtime friends and business and political associates and friends. And that's significant because Catherine Armstrong is supposedly the eyewitness on whose testimony all of our, and I use the word testimony to include, you know, public comments rather than in a legal sense, whose comments about what happened are our whole basis for understanding what we think happened. She's the person who said that Cheney was 30 yards away. She's the person who has described what happened. Her friendship with Cheney is certainly something to consider there, particularly when you start looking at her statements that just don't add up or that directly conflict with things that Cheney has said. There's some real question as to what she actually saw. If you think back to her first comments, she said that when she saw the vice president's Secret Service detail rushing towards him, she assumed that he must be having a heart attack or some sort of heart problems.
Yeah.
Well, if she actually watched Dick Cheney shoot Harry Whittington and Harry Whittington fall to the ground, she would have known why the Secret Service agents were rushing over. So that just doesn't make any sense. And there are other ways where her story conflicts with Cheney's story. So, you know, it is significant that there's a longstanding relationship between her and Cheney, and it makes you wonder, you know, that coupled with some of the things she said that either can't be true or are inconsistent with what other people have said, you know, if she's covering something up.
And this becomes a metaphor for the way the Bush administration operates, where things are floated out there and then modified as time goes on. And it makes it very difficult to, you know, have basic credibility in their statements. And they also seem to think that we're not paying attention or we're really stupid and that we can't compare these, you know, different stories that we've been told over the past week.
Yeah, the most noteworthy of them, of course, being the fact that in the first few days, Cheney's spokespeople, including Armstrong and Mary Madeline and others, were basically blaming the victim. They were running around saying that Cheney hadn't done anything wrong and that Whittington was to blame for not announcing himself, that he had wandered into the line of fire. And then when that didn't fly, Dick Cheney came out and said it was his fault.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Britt Hume didn't ask him if it was his fault why he had sent surrogates out there to spend 3 days blaming the victim. But it's actually pretty similar to something we've seen this administration do over and over again, is they have the underlings, the staff folks, the Karl Roves and the Mary Madelines of the world, smear people, and then Bush and Cheney take the high road. They did that with Jack Murtha when Scott McClellan, the White House press secretary, just attacked him when Murtha first called for a withdrawal of troops, and then Bush and Cheney sort of took the high ground and they got away with it, and they pretty consistently, the media doesn't hold them accountable for that, doesn't hold them responsible for what they send their staff out to do.
And in today's New York Times piece that I referred to from Elizabeth Buemiller at the White House, this is something that we're now seeing pretty commonly in most media coverage, that the story is over. She wrote, "The Cheney story now seems to have completed its trajectory. Even as Time magazine reported on Sunday that President Bush had to lean on Cheney to talk publicly about the accident." That's a very interesting phrasing there, because they float the administration talking point that it's all done, no charges will be pressed, Harry's fine, Dick's upset, and this is just a private accident on a personal weekend, let's move on. But I think there are legitimate questions that remain unanswered, and I think that the trajectory of the story is not complete. Your thoughts?
Well, I'd agree with that, and I'd add that if the story is complete in terms of how much it'll be talked about publicly and how much it'll be part of the news, that's because reporters are deciding that it's complete. We see stories like this a lot, where news organizations or reporters or pundits will declare a case closed or a story over. They're doing it with the NSA wiretapping matter. And they seem to be pretending that they play no role in determining whether or not that's true. The fact is that, as you mentioned, there are serious questions that we don't know the answers to about the shooting, both in terms of the shooting itself and how it speaks to the White House's operation in other matters. Mm-hmm. Now, if reporters decide not to bother getting the answers to those questions, then yes, this will fade away. People won't talk about it anymore. But they shouldn't act as though this is some sort of external force that's coming down on them and ending the story, and there's nothing they can do about it. They can't seek answers to the questions of whether or not Armstrong was actually a witness, or why Dick Cheney spent 3 days letting his surrogates attack a man who he now says wasn't to blame.
And how many beers were actually consumed there? Anybody who tells me they only had one beer, anybody with DUIs in his past, it gets my skeptic gland going big time and overtime. JMO, I want to point out on the website of MediaMatters.org, on the homepage, there's a link to a great story. Media employ verbal gymnastics to avoid saying Cheney shot hunting partner. Don't want to take the time to cite all these on the air because the other stories I want to get to in the next segment. But I think listeners will be amused by the way you have captured the artful phrases that were used to avoid saying, oh yeah, the vice president shot his friend. We'll pick up there as we continue. We're going to talk about who populates the Sunday political talk shows and how the media has handled Bush's domestic spy lying. That's all ahead as we continue with Jameson Fosser from Media Matters for America. Join us with a question or comment. Central Coast 831-899-5792. Eureka or anywhere else, toll free at 1-888-579-2540. You're listening to The Peter B. Collins Show. Are you looking for money for college? Every year, billions of dollars in financial aid go unclaimed because parents just don't know how to properly access those funds. Mistakes are made in filling out applications. Deadlines are overlooked. And ultimately, it's the student who loses out on desperately needed funds. R.J. Moyer, president of AboutCollegeFunding.com, offers solutions to your financial aid dilemma.
If you're the parent of a college-bound high school junior or senior, critical deadlines are rapidly approaching, and we do specialize in late-stage college funding planning. Regardless of your income, assets, or home equity, I can help you send your child to the college of his or her choice without spending your life savings. But you must take action now.
AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. Call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
It's tax time again, and there's one Progressive tax preparer in the Monterey Bay area who specializes in tax returns for W-2 and self-employed working people. Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in preparing tax returns that maximize your refund and, through electronic filing, get you that refund as soon as you need it, in 24 hours, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks. The choice is yours. The personnel of Jim Moore Income Tax have been helping the hardworking Spanish-speaking residents of the Central Coast with immigration and tax preparation services for more than 30 years. You can get your tax return professionally prepared and electronically filed by bilingual tax professionals at a very reasonable fee. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. Jim Moore Income Tax at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just two blocks from the Central Plaza. Be sure to bring a copy of your 2004 federal and California returns, W-2 1099 info for 2005. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. 30 Alexander Street, downtown Watsonville. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540.
If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
Discover the magic of green tea, an ancient secret with amazing powers. The benefits of green tea have helped improve the health of thousands of people. Renowned health expert Dr. Alex Duarte says that green tea has powerful antioxidant properties that keep the immune system strong. Listen to KRXA AM 540 on Saturday, February 25th at 5 p.m. to learn how you can use green tea to increase energy, lose weight, and live longer. Don't miss this show on Saturday, February 25th at 5 p.m. right here on KRXA AM 540, your progressive prescription.
.322 now. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. I am your humble host, Peter B. Thanks for joining us today. We continue our conversation with Jamo Fozer from Media Matters for America, their great website, mediamatters.org. And, Jamo, I have a confession to make. You guys have published a very interesting analysis of the Sunday morning political talk shows. They've been nicknamed the gas bags. And my confession is that I never watched those shows. I work on Sunday morning, and I could TiVo the shows and watch them later on, but I find that for the most part, it's just a lot of, back scratching, and often, very little is advanced in terms of new information about stories or politics. That aside, the analysis that you published is fascinating because it shows that the networks have responded to the ascendancy of the neocons and the Bush administration by tilting these shows in favor of conservative voices.
It does, and what we did was we looked at the guest lists of the three major Sunday shows, ABC, CBS, and NBC, from 1997 to 2005. That's Bill Clinton's second term, George Bush's first term, and then 1995, just to keep it current. And came to a total of nearly 7,000 guests who appeared on those three shows for those 9 years. And we classified each one of them as a Democrat, a Republican, a conservative, or a progressive, or neutral. And we found that Republicans and conservatives have had a rather large advantage in terms of the number of guests on these three shows. It was a slight advantage during Bill Clinton's second term for Republicans and conservatives, which is a little bit counterintuitive. Mm-hmm. And that advantage became a very, very large advantage during George Bush's first term in 2005.
And quickly citing the numbers, it was 52-48 during the second Clinton term, and it is now 58-42 under Bush.
Right. Right. And then we broke down the numbers a few different ways to sort of see if the patterns would hold. And one of the more interesting breakdowns that we found actually wasn't about elected officials, but was about journalists. The majority of journalist guests have been neutral folks like David Broder or straight news reporters. But of the sort of ideological journalists, the John Funds of the world, we found a massive imbalance in Bush's first term. 69% of the ideologically identifiable journalists were conservatives. So basically 3-1, or 2-1, the number of conservative journalists to progressive journalists who are on these Sunday shows. And that was a huge imbalance that that we see a lot. And you see, if you watch Meet the Press, I know you don't, but for those of your listeners who do, you see it just about every week in the panels they do. And just yesterday, they had a panel discussion that consisted of Paul Jagot, who's a conservative columnist with the Wall Street Journal, Maureen Dowd, who's arguably a progressive, we'll call her a progressive for the sake of conversation, David Gregory, who's a just straight journalist, completely neutral,
right,
and Mary Madeline, who's a Republican operative and a top advisor to Dick Cheney.
Mm-hmm.
That's a four-person panel that's pretty clearly skewed heavily to the right.
And often they do that where we have a far right, a center right, and then a journalist. And
right,
that is considered a balanced panel, and they never go to the center-left or even the progressive left. Not never, but almost never.
Right. The panel is almost never skewed to the left. We had a difficult time identifying any. But even beyond the balance of the panels, you just don't see on the Sunday morning talk shows anybody from The Nation or The Washington Monthly or The American Prospect or any number of progressive magazines. The conservative magazines, the Weekly Standard, the National Review, are very well represented, and it's not a question that you can just answer by circulation. The Prospect and The Nation have comparable circulation figures, I think actually better in some cases than the conservative counterparts.
Well, and I would just offer a personal observation. I think Katrina Vandenhoevel of The Nation, the publisher now, is hotter and smarter than Ann Coulter on any day of the week.
and yet you see it's not directly relevant to the Sunday shows, but Ann Coulter is a frequent guest on the Today Show.
Yeah.
And as is Bill O'Reilly. There just isn't a similar representation of progressives on those shows either.
Yeah, they'll bash Michael Moore, but they won't invite him on the show. J-Mo, let's jump now to the clip that we have of President Bush, and this really sets up what is clearly a pattern of untruthfulness on the part of the president about the NSA spying program. Let's listen to this clip.
Now, by the way, anytime you hear the United States government talking about wiretap, a wiretap requires a court order. Nothing has changed, by the way. When we're talking about chasing down terrorists, we're talking about getting a court order before we do so. It's important for our fellow citizens to understand, when you think Patriot Act, constitutional guarantees are in place.
Now, that's President Bush in Buffalo in April of 2004. And, J-Mo, what we have clearly here is that the president has lied and that the administration has broken the law. It is as clear as if I went 90 miles an hour in a school zone and got caught. Yet the media still does backflips to say that, they infer, they cite experts who believe, but nobody can explicitly say, gee, the president broke the law.
No, and that audio that you played is interesting, because that's an April 2004 comment that we now know was just a flat lie. And in fact, George Bush has said the opposite of that now. George Bush has said that he has ordered wiretaps without a court order. So, you know, it really isn't a matter of interpretation whether or not that April 2004 statement was a lie. It is. And yet it's not getting the attention that you might assume it would. We took a quick look at how often the cable news shows and the networks have broadcast that April 2000 video of President Bush lying, and found that it was a total of 16 times, and then we compare that to the number of times that they broadcast back in 1998. Bill Clinton.
We've got to run here, but thanks, J-Mo, and I would just add that Alberto Gonzalez appears to have lied under oath before the Senate Judiciary Committee during his hearings to be confirmed as Attorney General. I'm Peter B. Collins. We'll continue.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
If you own a Volvo and you want quality repairs and great service at a fair price, then take your Volvo to Hunt's Auto Repair in Seaside. They only work on Volvos, and they can do any needed service and repair, including all factory-recommended maintenance. Owner Mike Brooks is a Volvo-certified and factory-trained technician with over 16 years' experience. Mike's partner, Tracy, is also a factory-trained Volvo service advisor. Many Volvo owners in the area already know and trust Tracy to take care of their Volvos.
Hans Auto Repair, 384 Olympia Avenue, Seaside, is a locally owned and family-operated full-service Volvo repair shop, where Mike and I feature honest, quality service at a fair price.
Bring your Volvo to us, and we'll do everything possible to ensure that you leave satisfied and fully informed about your Volvo. Remember, that's Hans Auto Repair, 384 Olympia Avenue, Seaside. For more info, give us a call at 583-9820.
That's 583-9820.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily from 10 to 7.
We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special, and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience, I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove has the finest selection of fresh local fruits, veggies, and meats. The Grove Market is also your first stop for delicious artisanal breads and other baked goods, and boasts an outstanding selection of Monterey wines. For competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey, shop at the Grove Market, Monday through Saturday, 8 to 7, 9 to 6 on Sundays, in downtown Pacific Grove. 242 Forest, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
This is it. This is the world we live in. What are we going to do about it? It's time to stop picking parasites off your friend's hairy back and become an engaged cerebral citizen. Yes, there is more to American youth culture than McDonald's, malls, MySpace, and corporate monopolies. We have got to do better than the current apes that are in the process of turning this country into a banana republic. But we need your help. Call in, tell your friends, and listen to The Naked Ape, Sundays on KRXA.
Listen live, Sundays from 12 to 1 p.m.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, live up and down the left coast. We're live on KRXA 540, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. We are live in vivo on KGOE Eureka 1480, and I'm glad you're listening. During the next 90 minutes, we're going to get two interesting perspectives on life on the ground in occupied Iraq for Iraqis. And it's something that is seriously missing from America's media coverage. Yes, in the 51st state of occupied Iraq, conditions are, in a word, miserable. And while George W. Bush touts the liberation of 25 million Iraqis, when the electricity doesn't work most of the time, when you don't have a job, and when you're constantly looking over your shoulder in terms of security risks, life cannot be normal, and one cannot be celebrating the freedom that George W. Bush touts. Next hour, we will be joined once again by Mark Manning. He was with us last week, and I was so impressed with what he has to say and felt he had more to say that we invited him back. He has produced the new documentary called Caught in the Crossfire, which focuses on the assaults on Fallujah from the point of view of the people who live there or lived there. Mark Manning will join us in about a half an hour. But first, Rita Leisner is a photojournalist and a Canadian who is one of four contributors to a powerful new photo book called Unembedded, Four Independent Photojournalists on the War in Iraq. And I'm pleased to have you join us today, Rita. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Peter. Hello.
I'm glad you survived.
Because, so are my parents.
each of the journalists who contributed to this book wrote a narrative. You wrote a piece about 500 words, and I am only skeptical that you didn't tell us everything. You talked about the harrowing journey you made into Iraq from Turkey. You sprained your ankle, almost fell off a cliff, and had to pay large bribes just to get into Iraq. Tell us a little bit about that initial story, about your introduction to Iraq.
Well, when I was planning initially on going into Iraq, that was not one of the difficulties I had predicted would be just the trip that I ended up making across the border from Turkey. Originally, I had gambled on the border being opened by the Turks to the American military. And at that point, myself and several thousand other journalists hoped to cross the border along or behind the U.S. military. But in fact, the Turks never did open up the border. And the reasons for that
we offered them $6 billion.
Well, they are very concerned about the Kurdish situation, your listeners, many will know, the Kurdish region of Turkey, Iran, Iraq, and Syria all sort of conjoin on the intersection of those four countries. Mm-hmm. And the Kurds in Turkey have been fighting for many decades with the Turks, many wanting to have an independent Kurdistan. And the Turks were concerned that by opening that border up, that a dialogue would open up with the Kurds in northern Iraq, who have a great deal more autonomy than the Kurds in Turkey do.
Well, and it's fair to say that the authoritarian government in Ankara, in Turkey, while it has the veneer of democracy and it is a secular country, they have been very harsh on the Kurds in southern Turkey. And it's an open kind of civil war that the government has waged, as you pointed out, for 15 or 20 years. And there are many Kurdish Turks who are imprisoned for long stretches. It's a very ugly episode of the Turkish story. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's important for Americans to know about. I think that it's underplayed in our media because this is one of the touch points and real critical areas of potential future conflict as the Kurds in Iraq fight for more autonomy. And I think that as Iraq is partitioned, this is my sense, that Kurdistan will surface in northern Iraq and that this will create great tensions with the Turkish government. What's your take?
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's a totally underplayed part of the story. I'm not really sure why. I think maybe because it seems so far away from what's going on in central and southern Iraq. But the Kurds in Iraq have had so much more autonomy than Kurds in any other country for a long time because of their agreement with the Americans following the last war. And this will be a problem for the Turks, clearly, as it was before the war. And again, that's something that was never really talked about much. A lot of people aren't really aware of the fact that the Americans weren't allowed to cross that border.
Mm-hmm. So you got into Iraq through Turkey, and it was much more difficult than you thought, and you had to burn most of your cash in favors and bribes to the mm-hmm. people who spirited you through this difficult journey.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you, I mean, there are no ATMs in Baghdad that work with Western banks these days, are there?
Well, you know, now you can get money in Iraq, absolutely. Back when I crossed the border, you couldn't. You could hardly find food. So it wouldn't have been so simple as trying to call back to Canada and get some money wired to me. I couldn't do that. So I had about $250 in cash left and made my way down to Baghdad and worked for cash, doing journalism jobs, photography jobs for cash, and that's how I managed to slowly build up the amount of money in my wallet again to feel comfortable enough to stay. And there were certainly a time early on when I really thought that I wasn't going to be able to cover this story, which was a devastating idea for me because I really felt very much that I wanted to witness this and see what was going to play out after the fall of Baghdad.
Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about the ambush in Latafia in April of 2004.
That happened, April 2004, which would have been about exactly a year from when I first arrived in Iraq. And I had been home in the interim and come back. And at this time, the insurgency, which I had witnessed the beginnings of in the summer of 2003, it was now, you know, going through sort of phases of rises and dips. And at this point, the Mahdi army was starting to appear more on the scene, as were some of the other unknown or unnamed insurgent groups on the Sunni side. And myself and another Canadian journalist were covering the story. We were making regular trips to the south in search of the Mahdi army and other insurgent groups. And on our way back to Baghdad one afternoon, we stumbled into an ambush. And we got out of our vehicle. We were taking photographs of the fighting that ensued after the ambush. And, one thing led to another, and we ended up being taken captive by some people that were, I don't think, so particularly hostile against us as just hostile and angry. They had just been in a serious fight and had killed some people, and they decided that we were a threat, and quite typically we were accused of being spies. You know, this is a typical accusation against foreigners who witness these kinds of events. And we thought that they were going to kill us. I certainly thought that they were going to kill us. They were crazed, and we had just seen them kill. So there's this sort of sense that once someone has just killed, it's not such a big leap for them to kill immediately after. This is not like a kidnapper who has some kind of financial motivation and has yet to, you know, commit a harsher act. But our driver and translator, it's kind of a long story, but our driver and translator, at great risk to himself, came and found us. And he negotiated with these men, and he swore on a Quran that we were good journalists, meaning that we weren't spies, that we weren't going to publish pictures of them or tell the American military what had happened. And they agreed to let us go, and one of the conditions was that if there was any report in the news of the ambush and the incident in which they had attacked a U.S. convoy and had killed several soldiers, which we saw, that they would come and kill us. And they knew where we were, and they did because they had searched our belongings, and they knew where we were staying. And, of course, we had no way of controlling whether or not this was ever reported. And, in fact, it never was. And we were never even able to get the American military to confirm that the attack had happened. So,
well, and under circumstances like that, you make the best deal you can and get your butt out of there.
Oh, you do. You tell them whatever you know. You just want to get out of there. You don't know what's going to happen later. But we're very lucky. They did take all of our equipment because they thought that, you know, we had images of them. So I lost all my equipment.
Mm-hmm. Rita Leisner is our guest. She is one of the contributors for photojournalists to this powerful new book called Unembedded. We'll tell you more details on the book and how you can find it coming up in our next segment. And if you have a question or comment for Rita, she's with us until 4:30. We're going to be joined at 4:06 by Mark Manning, the producer-director of the new documentary, Caught in the Crossfire. In our next segment, I want to talk with Rita about the Siege of Najaf and its impact on the Iraqi residents there. If you have a question, join me, 831-899-5792. That's 831-899-KRXA on the Central Coast. Or you can call toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. at 1-888-579-2540. You want to email me? Drop me a note, peter@krxa540.com. Our music in the moment from The Cure. This one's called Pictures of You. And you're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
Imagine how nice it would be if your mortgage broker knew as much about the ins and outs of specialized lending programs as your trusted mechanic knows about your car. A mortgage broker willing to take the time to open the hood of your financial strengths while checking under the engine for costly money leaks. Make sure your mortgage broker has the experience, integrity, and know-how to provide you the optimal financial tune-up for your particular circumstances. Giving you staying power over the long haul and the capacity to take advantage of life's opportunities as they chance to appear.
Hi, I'm Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage in Salinas. Let me help you fine-tune your future real estate plans. The price of gasoline is through the roof, but interest rates are still near all-time lows. Don't let this opportunity pass you by. Give me a call today at 757-0436. 757-0436. I'm Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage and looking forward to working with you.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
There are radio talk shows about sports, politics, money, sex, and religion. Now there's a talk show for parents and everyone else who cares for and about children. It's Childhood Matters, every Sunday from 9 to 10 a.m. here on KRXA 540. I'm the host, Rona Renner, the mother of four, a new grandmother, a nurse, and parent educator. Listen and call in Childhood Matters every Sunday from 9 to 10 here on KRXA 540.
It is useless to resist us.
3:47 now, you're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. My guest is Rita Leisner. She is a photojournalist from Canada who made several trips to Iraq and captured some very powerful scenes. She's one of four photojournalists who contributed to this new book called Unembedded. And there's a website, if you'd like more information, at unembedded.net, unembedded.net. It's published by Chelsea Green, and it's out in soft cover for $30. That's a bargain, considering the fabulous color photos here. And I guess fabulous is a strange word to use when we're talking about grisly scenes and the human carnage from our occupation of Iraq. But the quality of the photographs and the printing is top-notch, and I recommend this book to you. Rita, we have a few minutes here, and I'd like to just kind of give you the floor and ask you to describe what you saw in Najaf in August of 2004. And as I mentioned, Mark Manning is going to join us in about 20 minutes, and he captured similar scenes in Fallujah. And so I think it'll be interesting for our listeners to hear both perspectives, and then the two of you can compare notes in our next segment. But take us into Najaf. Like Fallujah, this is a very holy city with numerous mosques. Is the count somewhere around 60? Is that right?
Well, there's one principal shrine in Najaf, and that's a sort of one of the features of Najaf, is the shrine of Imam Ali. So there are, you know, many mosques, but it's this central shrine with a golden dome that you can see from far away on the horizon that was where the Mahdi army holed out, and that is like the most characteristic feature of Najaf.
Mm-hmm.
Tell
us a little bit about how you got into Najaf and how you protected yourself as this city was under a U.S. siege.
The siege of Najaf, like the siege of Fallujah, are, you know, among the last to have been covered by journalists from the point of view of inside these cities, because now it's become pretty much impossible to access these places. And getting to Najaf itself, just getting there from Baghdad, was wildly dangerous because the road between Baghdad and Najaf saw many kidnappings. And it was even during this 6-day period before I found myself in Najaf, six journalists that we knew had been kidnapped along this same road to Najaf. So just getting to the town itself was incredibly dangerous. Whereas there were many journalists there as embedded journalists coming in with the military, who, of course, have a very different perspective of what's going on. They were with the tanks and the military in the cemetery that surrounds the shrine of Imam Ali. It's one of the largest cemeteries in the world. It's 5 square kilometers. It was built up because of Imam Ali's shrine where he's buried, and is considered one of the holiest places, actually the holiest place of all in the Shiite Muslim world to be buried. So we wanted to get into Najaf, not with the military, to get into the city and see what was going on the ground, where in the residential areas around the shrine, where the Mahdi army themselves were, where many residences were now trapped. A lot had gotten out, but many were trapped. The city was now cordoned off by the military, and it was also encircled by a sniper line of the Mahdi army. And Thorne Anderson, who is one of the other photographers in the book, and Philip Robertson, who wrote the introduction to the book, they were able to cross the front lines and get into the shrine before anybody else. And they had satellite phones with them, and they talked to us, and that was when we heard the first reports coming out of the shrine. It was coming from Thorne and Philip. And Kale, who's also in the book, was trying also to cross the front lines and get in, as was Haith. I arrived a few days after they did, and this is described in the introduction to the book. Thorne and Philip were inside the shrine covering the story, but the situation was getting increasingly dangerous, and they were running out of batteries. And this is, you know, something that people who aren't doing this kind of work don't think about, that if you're somewhere like this, you might have technical problems, and running out of batteries and disks, it would mean that they wouldn't be able to report the story anymore. Thorne wouldn't be specifically with photography. And it was also dangerous. We were getting concerned about their ability to leave safely. And many of us other journalists also wanted to get access to tell the story to to make datelines and to be able to report back to stations around the world, because report coming from one or two journalists is, you know, never going to be as effective as coming from more, because you want to be able to reach out to as many media outlets as possible. And so Kale and myself spearheaded a ceasefire, which we negotiated with the American military and the Mahdi Army and the Najafi police, to organize a convoy of journalists to go to the shrine, ostensibly to enable us to escort our colleagues out, also to hopefully have a press conference with the Mahdi representatives in the shrine, and also, you know, further report on the story, and that's what happened. That's how I got in initially, but the siege lasted for several weeks after that, and we would go back on several occasions. I crossed front lines on another occasion with Thorne and Kale and Philip and Haith also, and Joao Silva of the New York Times, and some other journalists, Chris Albritton of Time magazine. And what we saw, the most striking feature would be the destruction. You know, crossing these front lines, you notice the desertion of the place, crumbled buildings, of all the any kind of electrical towers down, hanging in the street. The wires, at least, they weren't hot at this point because all the electricity was gone. Mm-hmm. There are people hiding out in their homes, unable to leave. This the kind of destruction that, of course, journalists who are embedded with the military and in the graveyard as they are lobbing missiles toward the city aren't able to see.
Right.
And it's something that, of course, we're not seeing now with what's going on in Iraq, because really now I can't imagine how you could get to these towns that we hear names of all these towns in Iraq where there's a siege or there's a battle and they take so many insurgents and they kill so many insurgents. I mean,
now, Rita, let me ask you, how did you negotiate access to some of these holy places? Because you're a Western woman, did you put on a headscarf or go for an abaya? Or
we absolutely had to be covered.
Mm-hmm.
In full abayas in these places. To go into a holy place, you had to be absolutely covered.
And did that give you some protection, because it wasn't obvious then that you were a Westerner?
It was still incredibly obvious that we were Westerners.
Yeah.
Especially as we have cameras.
Yeah.
You know, this is, you know, I just thought often, I mean, to a degree you can. I've heard stories of people disguising themselves in abayas, and yes, there is some degree of hiding that's possible. But if you're in the backseat of a car, for instance, something like that. But once you're actually in one of these places, and you're a photographer, there's another issue that wouldn't maybe affect a writer so much.
Mm-hmm.
As a photographer, you have to have your cameras out in the open, or you're not actually doing your job. So,
right.
Pretty hard to hide.
And
those work boots too. Those are, they always say, look at the shoes.
We have about 2 minutes remaining in this segment. Can you give us a sense of a family that you met, or some individuals, you know, brothers or sisters who you encountered in Najaf, and what they told you about their attitudes toward the occupation and toward just the stresses of their daily lives?
I can't say I met anybody who was in favor of the occupation any time after about maybe 2 months after the fall of Baghdad. Pretty much after that, I stopped meeting people who were in favor of it, because they see it as related to the escalating violence and all the other problems that are now just tormenting Iraq. They see it as being connected to the occupation, and it's hard to deny that that's true. At the same time, they weren't really happy about having the Mahdi army occupying the shrine of Imam Ali, because they just saw all these things as bringing fighting into their town, and they didn't want anything to do with it. So the people are just scared. They just want the fighting to stop. And
were there any Sunnis in Najaf, or is that an entirely Shiite town?
Pretty much Shiite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And did you encounter
But on the road between Najaf and Baghdad, you know, many Sunni towns, so they're not all that far apart.
And did you encounter any score settling between Sunnis and Shiites?
You know, I never did. My one of my most regular translators and drivers was half Sunni, half Shiite.
Mm-hmm.
I knew many such people.
Okay, let me stop you there. We're up against a break here, and we'll continue in a few minutes with Rita Leisner. The book is called Unembedded, a powerful collection of photojournalism. Mark Manning, the producer-director of Caught in the Crossfire, will join us in the next segment here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily from 10 to 7.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Remembering a sports play-by-play legend, Kurt Gowdy.
There's a long drive. That one's deep. It is going. It is gone.
The president in the Midwest pushes for alternative energy sources.
The dependence upon oil is a national security problem and an economic security problem.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Dave Barrett. As a kid growing up in Cheyenne, Wyoming, Kurt Gowdy said his mother made him take elocution lessons. He asked, how is this going to do me any good? The answer came time and time again in the 1960s.
There's a fly ball hit out to left, waiting is Jones. The Mets are the world champions.
From the World Series to the first Super Bowl ever played.
Clock will officially start. Adderley on the 6, to the 15, to the 20.
Kurt Gowdy was a familiar voice on the national stage. He died today at age 86 in Palm Beach, Florida, after battling leukemia. Sports historian Kurt Smith.
You couldn't watch network TV without seeing Gowdy in the 1960s and 70s. If there was a sports event, Gowdy did it. If he didn't do it, it wasn't a major event.
He was a longtime Boston Red Sox announcer before going to the network level. As for his long, successful career, Gowdy once told the Academy of TV Arts and Sciences,
to me, it's the versatility that I did. Football, basketball, baseball, Olympics, American sportsmanship, fishing, hunting. So I was always proud that I wasn't just a baseball announcer, that I could go in and do just about anything.
He did it well enough to become the first sportscaster to win a Peabody Award. He's in the broadcaster's wing at the Baseball Hall of Fame. Commissioner Bud Selig calls Kurt Gowdy's voice a comfort to a generation of baseball fans. So those boyhood elocution lessons paid off many times over. Now this.
If you're living in a space that's too small or too large or too old or just too ugly, here's what you do. Take a 2x4 to the problem. Maybe some 2x6s. Heck, just take all your lumber and give it to a member of the American Institute of Architects. We'll design a home that fits your needs and your budget to a T. Call an AIA architect early, so your living space won't be too this or too that, but just right. AIA. Good design makes a difference. Visit AIA.org.
For the fans. This is for all of you out there who want to get a little closer to the 2006 U.S. Olympic team. We know you're a fan, and AT&T has put together a way for you to get to know Team USA. You can send personal best wishes and good luck messages to each of your favorite U.S. Olympic team members. Just visit att.com/Team USA and let AT&T deliver your support to the U.S. Olympic athletes in Torino. AT&T, proud sponsor of the 2006 U.S. Olympic team. Introducing the new AT&T. Your world delivered.
Lithium-ion batteries are produced at a plant in Milwaukee. Those batteries help make hybrid vehicles go. The president saw that firsthand today in Wisconsin and brought with him a message. Here's CBS News White House correspondent Mark Noller.
Pressing his case for accelerated development of alternative sources of energy, President Bush warned of the dangers of buying so much oil from countries that are not America's friend.
It creates a national security issue when we're held hostage for energy by foreign nations that may not like us.
In this midterm election year, Mr. Bush wants Republicans to be seen leading the effort to help the U.S. kick its addiction to oil by increased use of coal, nuclear, solar, and wind energy. Mark Knoller, CBS News, with the president in Milwaukee.
Fresh excerpts have surfaced from Osama bin Laden's message of last month. Al Jazeera aired them today. Through an interpreter, the al-Qaeda leader said the U.S. will never capture him alive.
I have sworn to only live free. Even if I find bitter the taste of death, lest I be humiliated or deceived.
The tape also promised more attacks on the U.S. As many as 1,400 people may have died in Leyte in the central Philippines following a terrible mudslide on Friday. U.S. Marines have been assisting in the search for survivors, but CBS's Barry Peterson says none have been found in the past couple of days.
There is now a growing realization that it may be impossible to find many of the victims. The mud is just too deep. Some are suggesting that all efforts be stopped and a special ceremony held. Then this whole area that was once a bustling village could be consecrated as one huge cemetery.
Another disaster has families waiting in San Juan de Sabinas, Mexico. An underground explosion a day ago trapped 65 coal miners. Rescuers think they have gotten to within about 300 feet of two workers. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Hey, it's me, Regis Philbin. Know what's great about hosting a national talk show? You hear the latest health and nutrition information. That's why I was surprised to find out that a great thing you can do to help promote a healthy heart comes from something I've loved my whole life. Welch's 100% grape juice. Yeah, the same delicious grape juice we all grew up on is actually good for your heart. Because Welch's is made from antioxidant-rich Concord grapes with no added sugar. It's even certified by the American Heart Association. Welch's 100% grape juice. The most delicious thing you can do for your heart.
Kleenex presents Gold Medal Moments.
The first time we put her on skis, she cried. Then she hit the slopes, and her tears turned into a great big smile.
Thank goodness for Kleenex tissue. Capture your child's moments by playing the Kleenex U.S. Olympic Gold Game. Details on specially marked packages or visit usgoldgame.com. You can win thousands of great prizes, including digital cameras.
Funny, now I cry when she skis.
Kleenex tissue, proud supplier of 2006 U.S. Olympic team. No purchase necessary. Legal residents of the U.S. 18 and older. Void where prohibited. Promotion ends 3506. Kimberly Clark Global Sales, Inc.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
First they went and stole the election. Supreme Court made the selection. The corporations gave the direction. They said Bush it. He went and hired his daddy's staff and a few guys from Nixon's just for a laugh. Now the world is his oyster, split in half. Bush it. Though he'd never been to a foreign land, had a map of the world he'd never understand. Right up his back with the puppeteer's hand. Bush it.
Bush it. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. We're live up and down the left coast here. And for our minders at the NSA and the FCC, there are no L's in this song. It's just Bush it.
Where this whole thing's gonna end.
We continue now with photojournalist Rita Leisner. As we mentioned, she contributed photos to this powerful new book called Unembedded, subtitled Four Independent Photojournalists on the War in Iraq. It's published by Chelsea Green and out in soft cover, should be at your local independent bookstore. And thanks for staying with us, Rita. Also joining us is Mark Manning, who returns to the program. He was with us last week, and I was so impressed with the information that he has and the way he can convey it that I invited him back today. Mark, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And you're out in Montana, where your documentary was screened at a film festival. Tell us a little about that.
Yeah, I'm out at the Big Sky Documentary Film Festival in Missoula, Montana. Nice, warm 10 degrees.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful place out here, actually.
Now, that's a pretty red state. What kind of reaction do you get from your film, which focuses on the civilians in Fallujah as the U.S. assault was underway?
Yeah, it was really touching. We screened it on Saturday, and we got a full house and a really warm reception here. It was met very well. People were interested in stuff that they hadn't seen. I've been talking to people on the street and even on the plane flying in, and you know, there was a genuine interest to a side of the story that they're not getting to. They don't want to be preached to, which I avoid at all costs. But they were receptive to receiving some information that is not available in the mainstream media.
Mm-hmm. And Rita Leissner, what kind of reaction do you get from Americans about the powerful photos in your book? They're presented without a political spin or any real commentary that's critical of the U.S. foreign policy or our president. But I imagine that some people infer things that they pick up from the photographs.
Well, a lot of people respond with surprise because they haven't seen these kinds of images before, and a lot of people are surprised at how bad things are over in Iraq, which of course surprises me because I think I somehow take for granted that other people have seen what I've seen, which of course isn't the case. And then there are those who accuse us of treason for showing pictures from outside the American military, which of course, we're just showing as much of the story as possible. It's not a matter of us taking sides.
Mm-hmm. But when people see the real impact on real people, and there are some grisly photographs here of victims of bombings, victims of American attacks, do they then criticize you for delivering these pictures? You know, the attack the messenger spiel.
I have the luxury of living in New York and I'm Canadian as well, so I haven't been in any of the environments where people would be too critical, or where I'm in environments where people are already critical of the war. But definitely, we've received criticism for showing this. There are people who would say that it's, you know, we're not supporting the war, but I think even that attitude seems to be changing so drastically and so rapidly in the U.S. I mean, I think that a year ago we probably wouldn't have been able to publish this book with such success or acceptance. I think that we would have been attacked a lot more, but right now people seem willing to accept that this is what's going on, and I hope that it's part of the tide against the war.
And we are seeing, when we see coverage, and it's sharply limited and the reporters stay embedded or stay in the green zone, stay in their hotels, so there isn't much enterprise or independent reporting in the mainstream media coming from Iraq these days.
Mm-hmm.
But there are different standards. American television in particular has sanitized the images of the war. And we see it starkly whenever somebody shows you what's on Al Jazeera. And some people say, well, Al Jazeera is doing that for political effect. But the carnage is very real, yet the American images are often, as I said, quite sanitized. Mark Manning, did you encounter this problem as you showed the reality of the horror of our attacks on Fallujah?
The problem of the reaction of the audience you were just talking about?
Yeah, that they think that grisly photos shouldn't be seen, that you know, somehow this is poor taste.
Yeah, I get a lot of strong reactions from my film. I haven't got a lot of resistance to it, and one of the things I point out is, you know, by showing what's happening to the Iraqi people, it's not really possible to be called a traitor because theoretically we're there for the Iraqi people. So it's not like we're, you know, spending a day in the life of the resistance maybe and trying to glorify that. You know, showing what's happening to the civilians in Iraq, I think, is our duty as journalists, and I think it's our duty as American citizens to be aware of that. So I think it's predominantly a very American patriotic thing to be doing to bring this information back to the American people. And I think the American people's highest goal of patriotism right now would be to be requiring that information be given to them.
Rita, do you have any reaction? Because some of these photos are very graphic.
That was really beautifully put, Mark. I totally agree. I think that people's reaction is usually really good because they just haven't seen these pictures. I mean, I think that the reason that a lot of people have not been aggressively against this war is because they haven't seen these pictures, and as I mentioned, a lot of people are surprised, and when they see this and when they hear our stories and we have photographs as evidence, I mean, when you have images it impacts, it has more of an impact. People believe you. They know you're not just spinning a tale. And I think what it does is it makes them, they're not critical of us. They become critical of the media that hasn't shown them what's going on. They feel a little bit duped for being surprised, I think almost embarrassed that they didn't know what was going on.
And I believe that Americans are largely distracted, and if you just look at the television ratings, more people are watching American Idol than watch the Olympics or the Grammys a week ago. And it occurs to me that many Americans are so detached and disconnected from what's going on there that their initial reaction must be one of shock. But, Mark, do they get beyond that and, express any curiosity about what life is like for real civilians in Fallujah, for example?
Yeah, I've been doing these screenings around most of the country right now, really, and phenomenally what's happening is people stay much longer than the film, and they want information. They're asking me a lot of questions, and I think once the eyes are opened, it almost seems to be a healing for people to start to require information and want it. So it's been a really beautiful thing to be watching. Once people see this stuff, they're not turning away. They're asking for more. And I think that's something maybe our mainstream media ought to get is truth is a commodity right now, and it's actually got a huge market. I think that if somebody had the courage to stand up, like Rita, and start showing people what's going on, I think there'd be a huge market for that if the mainstream media would start to actually do that.
And for
maybe
you,
idealistic, but I think that's true.
Okay. And Rita, for you, similar reaction?
Yeah, absolutely. People want to know more. I mean, people who come out to our slideshows, I did something at a university recently, and students started all pouring in through the lecture, and one of the professors explained to me later that what was happening was that students who had come to the lecture and had friends who had blown it off were going to get them and saying, "You've got to come see this. This is journalism you haven't seen out of Iraq." I mean, people want to see this.
I can just imagine the flurry of text messages. And I feel a little bit rude. I should have actually introduced the two of you, Rita, Mark. Mark, Rita, did you guys meet in Iraq?
No.
I didn't think so. I mean, it's a big country, and I don't imagine that you spend Saturday nights sitting around a bar at the Al Rashid.
No, but I'd love to meet you. Maybe after the show, you can I can get Mark's email.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Nice to meet you on the phone. I'd like to talk with you further for
yeah.
sure.
All right, we're
going
to take a break and continue. Mark Manning, his new film is called Caught in the Crossfire. You can get full information and see a video trailer at conceptionmedia.net, C-O-N-C-E-P-T-I-O-N, conceptionmedia.net. It's called Caught in the Crossfire, and Rita Leisner, one of four photojournalists who contributed powerful images to the book Unembedded. We'll continue in just a moment. You want to talk with us? Get on the line now. 831-899-5792, Central Coast, or toll free from anywhere else at 1-888-579-2540. You're listening to The Peter B. Collins Show. Are you looking for money for college? Every year, billions of dollars in financial aid go unclaimed because parents just don't know how to properly access those funds. Mistakes are made in filling out applications. Deadlines are overlooked. And ultimately, it's the student who loses out on desperately needed funds. R.J. Moyer, president of AboutCollegeFunding.com, offers solutions to your financial aid dilemma.
If you're the parent of a college-bound high school junior or senior, critical deadlines are rapidly approaching, and we do specialize in late-stage college funding planning. Regardless of your income, assets, or home equity, I can help you send your child to the college of his or her choice without spending your life savings. But you must take action now.
AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. Call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
It's tax time again, and there's one progressive tax preparer in the Monterey Bay area who specializes in tax returns for W-2 and self-employed working people. Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in preparing tax returns that maximize your refund and, through electronic filing, get you that refund as soon as you need it. In 24 hours, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, the choice is yours. The personnel of Jim Moore Income Tax have been helping the hardworking Spanish-speaking residents of the Central Coast with immigration and tax preparation services for more than 30 years. You can get your tax return professionally prepared and electronically filed by bilingual tax professionals at a very reasonable fee. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. Jim Moore Income Tax at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just two blocks from the Central Plaza. Be sure to bring a copy of your 2004 federal and California returns, W-2 1099 info for 2005. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. 30 Alexander Street, downtown Watsonville. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside. KRXA 540 checks your traffic on this Monday afternoon, and we've got a new correspondent. Hello, Nate Samuels.
Hi there. As you might expect, a lot of people taking an extra day for the three-day. Not a lot to tell you about. We have one injury crash in the Santa Cruz Mountains. Loma Prieta Avenue at Summit Road. Looks like a solo vehicle rolled down an embankment. Emergency crews are on the scene tending to that. They've got a tow truck on the way out there. Monterey, southbound one at Camino Aguajito. Some vehicles swerving to avoid a ladder that's in the lanes. Otherwise, no stalls or accidents to report on Highway 1 in the Monterey-Carmel area. Southbound 1 through Santa Cruz, typically heavy this time of day. Looking pretty nice, just a few patches. Stop-and-go traffic from the Fishhook down to about State Park Drive in Aptos and up in the Santa Cruz Mountains. No stalls or accidents to report on Highway 17. This report is brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center. Sylvan Learning Center, learning feels good. Call 1-800-EDUCATE today. Nate Samuels with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thanks, Nate. Check you back in about a half an hour. This is the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 4:21 on this sunny Monday afternoon. We continue with our two guests who have spent time on the ground in Iraq with actual Iraqis. And if you have a question or comment, join us right now at 831-899-5792 for the Central Coast, or toll free at 1-888-579-2540. Our guests are Mark Manning, the producer-director of a powerful new documentary called Caught in the Crossfire, and it's about the siege of Fallujah. ConceptionMedia.net is the website if you want more information. And Rita Leisner is with us for this one more segment. Her book, she's one of four photojournalists who made the graphic contributions. It's called Unembedded, and there's a website at unembedded.net if you want to get more information. And let's take a call. We're joined by Susan from Felton here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Hello, Susan.
Hi there. My comment is this. I saw the film, and it was outstanding. Everybody in this country should see this film. I had Dar Jamal, who is an unembedded reporter and journalist, come out to Santa Cruz at the Vets Hall last April, and he showed some slides and a short film that he had.
Mm-hmm.
And then a UCSC professor saw him there, and she had him come up to UCSC in October. She had him in a beautiful room up at the music hall, packed house. He had a fantastic presentation. In fact, he has a website called DarJamalIraq.com,
mm-hmm.
and he also has a lot of this information. Well, Dar showed this this film, and the people in the audience were dumbstruck, awed, We do not get this kind of film at all. People were standing up saying that people should order 5 or 6 copies and hand them out. And I would suggest to the public 2 things. First off, that you have showings of this film in your community and you get this film out. And I also suggest that you buy a lot of copies. Have this gentleman come in, or whoever, like Dar Jamal brought it into Santa Cruz.
Yes, Dar Jamal has been on our program at least twice.
Yes, and he showed this for us. And people have no idea what's going on out there, and they really should buy many copies and hand this out. I know the community TVs, like in Santa Cruz Community Television, if you were to give them a copy of something like this, they would air it. And they would air it many times, because they've done this for me. I did something and brought out some Fallujah stuff that Dar had that night, and they played it over and over and over for months.
Great.
So if people get this out to their community televisions, it will be seen. And truly, people need to see this, and I want to thank Mark Manning for doing such an excellent job on this film.
Thank you, Susan. I appreciate that. And Mark, do you want to reply?
I love when my mom calls in. That's great. No, in all seriousness, that was a really touching call. And I got to say that on our website, when you buy the film, that it goes with screening rights, and we are encouraging people to screen the film. And we also have kits on the website that they can download, and it has information on how to host a house party, how to screen it, some materials that go with that. And that's what we're hoping for here, is a grassroots spread across the country where as many people as possible can see this film. So I really appreciate that call. It was nice to hear that it's working.
Thank you very much, Susan. Appreciate that feedback. Now, I want to turn to Rita first and then Mark on this same question. There have been varying reports about the extent to which the insurgency is fueled by al-Zarqawi and so-called foreign fighters. And the administration, when pressed, has admitted that there are probably no more than 1,000 non-Iraqis taking up arms against the occupation right now. Rita, to what extent did you come into contact with fighters, insurgents who were opposing the United States, but who were not Iraqis?
Well, it's interesting to have that number, 1,000, because I'd never heard of any kind of numbers being put on that before. I'm certain that there are foreigners, of course, involved in this, and who are fueling and funding also the insurgency. I'm not sure what kind of a high profile role they're playing. I never met any foreign insurgents in Iraq, never. And I met many Iraqis who were fighting or resisting, as they would say, the occupation.
While
the foreigners are there, I personally never met any, and they have to be in really very much in the minority.
And did people identify themselves when they met you? Would they say, I'm part of the Badr Brigade, or I'm a Sunni, or I'm a Shiite, or did they tend to withhold that info?
Well, there are such radically different insurgent groups, and being in Fallujah, would have experience with a totally different group of people than any that I would have met. The Mahdi Army, of course, were open. They were an open army. So I don't know, are they an insurgent group if they're actually open? The Badr Brigade, we knew who they were. They were also quite open about who they were. The people who captured me in Latafia, I have no idea who they were. I'm pretty scared of that whole part of the country. That would be groups that I don't think they're going to tell anybody who they are, who they're working for. I think many so-called insurgents are just bandits trying to make money, but it becomes so complicated that we can't possibly identify where they're all coming from.
Mark Manning, foreign fighters?
You know, I'd have to agree with that. There are some. In Fallujah, there were some. A high degree of that is coming from our administration's policy of destroying the army and opening up the borders for a free-for-all.
Yeah.
But in Fallujah, it was predominantly Fallujans. And at that point, even the term foreign fighter was used to describe any Iraqis who came into Fallujah to help defend that city. that weren't actual Fallujans. But the Fallujans would tell you that the predominant force that was resisting the siege were Fallujans themselves. And a lot of the Fallujans were very afraid of the foreign fighters themselves. And, you know, there were some in there. Even the Pentagon only estimates that there were 300. So, you know, the number is certainly overplayed in our media here. I think the predominant force in Iraq, in the resistance, are Iraqi people themselves.
We'll talk more about that as we continue with you, Mark Manning. And we're going to say goodbye to Rita Leissner. Again, she contributed photos to Unembedded. Visit the website unembedded.net. And we look forward to talking with you again, Rita.
Thank you so much.
Yep, I enjoyed it. Thanks for joining us today. Coming up next, more with Mark Manning and your calls too, 831-899-5792 or 888-579-2540. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540.
If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience. I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat the path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Hi,
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. We're rolling on at 4:33. We continue with Mark Manning, the documentary filmmaker, whose film is called Caught in the Crossfire. And you can get full information, and as he mentioned with Susan from Felton a few minutes ago, if you go to conceptionmedia.net, you can find out how to get a copy of the DVD and set yourself up for a house party or other screening event. And this is focused on the assault on Fallujah from the point of view of the citizens who were attempting to live there as the U.S. was attempting to recapture a city that we had once held, and then it fell back into the hands of the opposition. And, Mark, I want to pursue this a little further about how you define the insurgency there. It becomes critical because so many Americans, I think, have swallowed the line that al-Qaeda is extremely active. The president in the State of the Union message talked about how Osama bin Laden's goal is to govern Iraq. And I find that so preposterous that, you know, it'd be a laugh line if he didn't mean it. But my sense is that there is a small number of opportunists who have landed in Iraq because, as you pointed out in the last segment, we disbanded the army, we have high unemployment, the borders are very porous, and the U.S. occupiers don't have enough troops to lock down every city every night, and our opponents know that. So what is your characterization, without my trying to put words in your mouth, of the makeup of those who are pointing guns and using IEDs to kill American occupiers right now?
Well, I think you hit it on the head there, where it's a huge mix, and it didn't help that this is a region where there's a lot of people who have a bone to pick with the United States, and then we open up the borders and have a free-for-all. But, you know, one of the things I talk to people about, it's amazing to me in our country of how many hundreds of millions, I'm not sure, it's 300-something million here, that almost everybody I run into knows somebody or knows somebody that knows somebody that was killed in 9/11 here. And in Iraq, a country of 12 million, and up to now 150,000 civilians killed, everybody not only knows somebody, but knows somebody dearly or has a family member or a very, very close loved one or a member of their tribe killed by the American forces. So there is a resistance now that has been built from so many civilian casualties in such a small country. And I think that is the predominant force that's fueling the resistance, is what's happening to the civilians in Iraq and these military zones. So that's why we're focusing on trying to bring the American people what's happening there. There is no way to not have a resistance. It's almost a foregone conclusion when you've killed this many civilians.
So the civilians who you had contact with in Fallujah, did any of them mention al-Zarqawi, al-Qaeda, or any other foreign group as either someone that they look to as an ally in the, you know, in opposing the Americans, or a group or individual whom they feared because they were, you know, causing mini civil wars in some of these areas?
No, that's a really interesting story. The people that I met in Fallujah don't believe that al-Zarqawi exists.
Really?
Yes. They said they'd never seen him, they've never heard of him, he's never been in Fallujah. They believe he's something that the Americans are using to excuse military operations. I know that when I was in Fallujah, and it was no small event to be able to get in there, they announced that Zarqawi was back in Fallujah. And then they started raiding homes again, and it was preposterous. Like, how do you know he's here? Did he check in? It was something that they would joke about with me, you know. And they even one day I was sitting in a farmhouse, and some youngster about 4 years old came running at me and tripped and fell, and they were all laughing. I said, "Ah, Zarqawi is attacking the American. You have finally found Zarqawi. He's here." So to them, it's a joke.
Wow.
You know, I don't have any inside information on that stuff, but I can just tell you what I know about the people joking about him and saying that he's a villain the Americans are creating to excuse military operations such as Fallujah.
What about any alliances with Shia from Iran? Many stories have linked some of the Shia activists in Iraq, and even, I don't want to include Ahmed Chalabi in that statement, but Chalabi has made a couple of trips to Iran and is widely seen as cozying up to the government in Tehran. And so to what extent is there a sense that the Shia in Iran are allies of the Shia in Iraq?
Yeah, there's a worry about that, I know, amongst the Sunnis that I was with, because they're afraid of the rights for their women and all the things that would happen in a strictly fundamentalist Islamic government that might develop out of a relationship with Iran. And so, again, it's another byproduct. It's like freedom of the press doesn't exist in our democracy there. And now, potentially, what could happen to the rights of women going back, you know, centuries if this new government forms a bond with the Islamic fundamentalists in Iran. It's a worry to a lot of the women that I talk to there.
Mm-hmm. But there's no overt sign that they're sending money or troops or munitions or in any way directly supporting the Shia insurgency?
There may be, but it's not information that I have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And help me out here, because my guess is that Fallujah is largely Shiite.
Sunni.
Oh, it is Sunni. Okay,
yeah.
So it's in the triangle.
Right.
And so are there any Shiites in Fallujah, or were there before the U.S. assaults?
You know, before the assault, I think part of this division that's happening in the country is really being instigated a lot by us. I know that the people I was with were a mixture. They were Sunnis, but one of my translators was a Sunni Kurd that was married to a Shia. There was a lot of intermarriage. There was a lot of intermingling. Now, after the battle, we used Iraqi National Guards, which are predominantly Shia, and they're using those troops to man all the checkpoints and to do a lot of the home raids, and it's really instigating a blood feud. For instance, if you're sick right now in Fallujah and you need to get to the hospital, you have to go outside of the curfew, you know, just during daylight hours, through these checkpoints that are manned by Shias, which are now your blood enemies. We're really instigating this civil war that we say that we're fearing. Our policies are doing a lot to fuel it.
Mm-hmm. And from the perspective of the Iraqis, the Fallujans that you met, do they view the U.S. as somewhat hopeless in terms of understanding their culture, understanding the nuances of the interaction, say, between Sunni and Shia? And, you know, are the U.S. soldiers often being used to settle some of these blood scores, and yet they have no idea what they're actually doing, because many of them don't speak Arabic and they're insufficient translators? And so there's a real cultural divide between the occupiers and those whom they you know, hope to pacify.
Yeah, and that cultural divide, I think, has created a huge amount of trouble. I think it took us a while to figure out there in the checkpoints, you know, to bring in women and to bring in secluded areas where the women could be searched by women instead of men touching them. And you're not allowed, or you're not supposed to touch a woman. On and on and on, but as in Fallujah, when I was there, it was a really interesting phenomenon, being the only American that any of these people had ever met outside of the military. And to be able to walk into a home and to take off your shoes and to put your hand on your heart and to say salam alaikum in a gesture of respect, they were perplexed. Like, are there other Americans that do this? You know, they're only used to meeting Americans at the end of a gun and who wear boots into their house and to kick open the door. So, you know, it was an interesting phenomenon to meet these people and to see these wide eyes. Like, are there more Americans like you? Are there Americans that would respect us? And of course, I told them yes. You know, many, millions. There just has to be some kind of communication between the American people and the Iraqi people, so they don't think that we're all implements of this policy that is really destroying them.
Mm-hmm. And where do they get their information? I would think of Fallujah as a city that has been cut off from broadcast television and cable television. I guess some people still might have satellite dishes, but given that electricity is intermittent at best, is it word of mouth? Are there underground newspapers? Are there underground radio stations? How do people know what's going on?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's word of mouth is a phenomenal thing over there. Something can happen, and you can jump in a car and drive 60 miles an hour to the other side of the province, and they know about it somehow. But they do all have satellite dishes and, you know, generators, a lot of them, so they can get power. They're piggybacking generators. You know, they're kind of making up for their own lives, not relying on us, because they know nothing's going to happen as long as we're there. So they do get satellite. They do get satellite TV. There's a lot of Arab television stations. As you know, Al Jazeera has actually been kicked out of Iraq, so they're relying on some other Arab stations for that. They do watch a lot of TV, and I warned them, you know, that's going to be their downfall, because now I think we're there programming a lot of television in Iraq.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. I've got a pile more questions for you, Mark. Can you stay with us another segment?
Certainly can.
Great. And if you'd like to join me, I've got lines open for you right now, 831-899-5792 for the Central Coast. That's 831-899-KRXA. You can also call me toll-free from Eureka or anywhere else you're listening, 1-888-579-2540. That's 888-579-2540. Email? Yeah, I got it. Peter@KRXA540.com. We'll continue with documentary filmmaker Mark Manning in just a moment. Drop into his website, conceptionmedia.net, and get more information on Caught in the Crossfire. It's 4:44, and this is the Peter B. Collins Show. Michelle Ashen of Ashen Senior Resources is an IRA distribution specialist. Other than your home, your retirement plan is probably the largest investment you have. And you have a choice. You can pass it on to your beneficiaries as a legacy, or it can be left as an IOU to Uncle Sam. Chaos can lead to confusion. Most financial advisors cannot help or answer such questions like, why should my IRA not be in my trust? Should there be a separate IRA for each beneficiary? Is there a way to set up a multi-generation stretch IRA? Michelle Ashen, a certified estate planner and IRA distribution expert, is offering a 30-minute free consultation, which will resolve these issues and explain how to undo the mistakes you may have already made. Meet with Michelle to create a plan that will preserve and protect your life savings and distribute them in the most tax-advantaged way. Call today, won't you? 641-0236. That's 831-641-0236.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
4:47 now from KRXA 540. Let's check in with Nate Samuels at Metro Traffic.
Well, a pair of injury crashes to tell you about right now. We'll start you off with a new one in the Pajaro area, San Juan Road at Salinas Road. This is a vehicle that hit a telephone pole and then rolled into a field. We do have some lines down, but according to the CHP, they are off to the shoulder. Emergency crews now on the scene, and they should be directing traffic past the area. Santa Cruz Mountains, Loma Prieta Avenue at Summit Road. It's an injury crash. Solo vehicle apparently rolled down an embankment. Emergency crews now on the scene. They've still got a tow truck on the way to try to pull that vehicle back up onto the roadway. Both directions of Highway 17 through the Santa Cruz Mountains, problem-free right now. And Highway 1 in Santa Cruz, Monterey, Carmel, Nothing to tell you about. This is brought to you by Sears. Thursday through Tuesday, it's the President's Day sale at Sears. You better hurry. These deals won't be around forever. Get a big start at the President's Day sale at Sears. Nate Samuels with traffic on KRXA 540.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 4:48 now. Filmmaker Mark Manning is with us for another 10 minutes, and you're welcome to call him. We open up the phones for the Free Speech Zone from 5 to 6 p.m. Our number again is 831-899-5792. A local call on the Central Coast, 831-899-KRXA, or toll-free 1-888-579-2540. Our music of the moment from Midnight Oil. It's called My Country, Right or Wrong. And I don't buy that myself. And I think our country's done a lot of things that will haunt us and penalize us for years to come. Mark Manning has captured the angst and the stress of the American assault on Fallujah from 2004. The film is Caught in the Crossfire. Again, the website conceptionmedia.net to get full information and find out how you can get a copy and hold a screening in your home or a local hall or something like that. Mark, next I wanted to ask you about the overarching theme that the president has used to try to justify our unilateral invasion of Iraq. And, of course, he moved on from weapons of mass destruction and Saddam's purported connection to 9/11 and settled in on the freedom democracy thing. And I have, for the longest time, regarded the prospect of true democracy in Iraq as a cruel hoax. And I think that it flies in the face of history, of culture, of the ethnic and religious anchors of various segments of that society. And obviously, after 25, 30 years under Saddam, any institutions of democracy were so sharply hobbled that for us to expect that participatory government is going to just sprout in the, you know, there at the nexus of the Tigris and Euphrates seems extremely far-fetched and illusional or delusional.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that broke my heart when I was over there is because of what we've done to the civilians there, and because of the lack of, I think, any intentional care for the civilians in Iraq, for the people of Iraq, the words freedom and democracy now are a joke. It's used as a slang joke. When the power goes off, oh, that's freedom and democracy. When somebody hits a pothole that they can't fix because anybody fixing a road pothole will get shot for possibly planting a roadside bomb, oh, that's freedom and democracy. You know, we've created this ideal to be a joke over there, and it's really because they see how we're treating the people. And our intentions and our words really fall pretty short. And I think that's one of the tragedies of what we've done in Fallujah, especially because that message went out to the entire world. Fallujah is very well known throughout the entire world, especially in the Middle East. There are folk songs being written about it. There's pamphlets everywhere. It's a battle cry now of anti-Americanism. And I think in that action, we lost our moral standing, and we have a long road ahead of us and a lot of work to do to get that back.
And beyond the terms becoming poisoned or, you know, even being converted into a joke, do people aspire to vote? I mean, Bush has repeated that, you know, we had three elections last year. And, of course, when you really look at them, they weren't that different from the kind of elections that Saddam had. Do people really feel that they have a voice, or do they aspire to have a voice?
You know, I think anywhere people want a good life. I think if people of Fallujah that I talked to even said, hey, when the Americans came, we didn't fight. We were happy to see Saddam go. I don't think there were very many people in Iraq that liked Saddam. Even the Sunnis of Fallujah had an uprising against him before. But they waited to see if we stuck to our word. And when that word started being broken over and over and over again, they started rising up against us. And there's a long history there that we should really look at. So I think, you know, it's unfortunate. I think our intentions there were a lot different from what we are told here as a people, the reason we went over there for.
And do Iraqis that you talked with have a sense of the way Americans feel that their civil liberties, that their democratic rights have been rolled back at the same time that our president is posturing that he is going to inject or insert or force democracy on Iraq?
You know, while you asked that question, which is a great question, I remember a conversation I had with a fighter, and I was interviewing him, and I asked him, can there ever be peace between you and the American people? And he raised his hand in a little bit of anger, and he said, that is a stupid question. The American people are my brothers and sisters. And as a matter of fact, we have the same enemy.
That's
so I think they have a strong sense of what is happening to us over here, because what's happening to them is coming from the same source.
Now, what about oil? In the unembedded book, there is a photograph of some graffiti in Baghdad, and it reprises the bumper stickers that we've seen here in the U.S., no blood for oil. And do the Iraqis believe that the real reason we invaded and have occupied their country is that we want to take their oil?
Yes, I think they think that's a main part of it. They also think predominantly that we are working with the Israelis. I don't know more about that, really, about why we would be doing that, but I think, you know, speaking, just talking about what they tell me over and over again is they think that, you know, we're there to exploit their resources, and we're working at the bidding of corporations.
Now, speaking of corporations, we know that in the spring of 2004, the incident involving some contractors from Blackwater got front page treatment in the United States, and it was an awful scene. These guys were drawn and quartered, essentially, and hanged from a bridge. And I'm curious if Iraqis perceive a difference between uniformed American troops and the contractors, who often take many forms visually on the ground in Iraq.
Yeah, the lot of hatred that was generated toward those contractors, they were actually killed by weapons fire, and then the resistance that did that left, and the crowd assembled after that and did those terrible things to their corpses. But there's a lot of anger and fear towards the contractors, because they were given a green pass against any laws. Bremer did that when he left. He made the contractors outside of all Iraqi law. They cannot be accused of anything or tried for anything while they're there. So a lot of times there are now, you know, pretty much can be called death squads of private citizens from other countries working as contractors that are there. They can rape, torture, maim, murder, kidnap, and cannot be accused of any war crime because they're not soldiers, and they can't be brought to justice under Iraqi law. So it's a terrible thing for the Iraqis to experience.
And so those contractors actually kind of take on the form that we might imagine Al-Qaeda operatives would take on, that they appear to be above the local disputes and the local conflicts and have their own agenda. They're using the turmoil and the chaos there for other purposes.
And what those purposes are, nobody knows. They're operating outside of any controlling authority. And what's not lost on the Iraqis is that the Americans allowed that to happen under Bremer's rules. So the consequences of all that happening, they see as a byproduct or a direct result, of American writing the laws for the Iraqi people. And that's where some of that rage came from.
And, Mark Manning, what about permanent bases? Are Iraqis sensitive to the idea that the U.S. is building some mega bases, one near Baghdad and one about 60 kilometers north, that many of us expect will be there 10 or 20 years from now?
I think, you know, as the resistance is growing, it's growing because the predominant thought with the Iraqi people is that the Americans have no intentions of leaving. And those bases have a lot to do with that. You know, when you're watching the construction of these huge bases, and then hearing, you know, that we might be leaving, I think the two are directly opposing each other, and the facts on the ground speak louder than words over the air.
My take is that the Iraqis have always known that the U.S. was not there permanently, at least not with 135 or 150,000 troops. And my belief is that people in that part of the world have a different concept of time and are willing to wait years and years for things to change. And this is what drives me to support Jack Murtha and others who call for withdrawal, because I believe whether we withdraw next year or 20 years from now, that those forces will be prepared to fill the void whenever we do exit.
Right. I think, it's a very confusing subject to me when people ask me what should be done, because we've created such a catastrophe over there. But I think at the end of the day, you have to ask the Iraqi people what they want. I think it's up to now 85% of the population wants us to leave immediately, and that's including Shias and Kurds. And 65% now are supporting suicide missions against the United States Army. So I think this is a land of people that are demanding us to leave their country and take care of their own problems. And I think we've shown that we're not qualified to take care of their problems for them. We can't even do that here. So I think.
Mark Manning, thank you for joining us. The film is Caught in the Crossfire. Visit the website, conceptionmedia.net. Thank you very much, Mark. We'll talk again.
My pleasure.
I'm Peter B. Collins. Free Speech Zone next. Imagine how nice it would be if your mortgage broker knew as much about the ins and outs of specialized lending programs as your trusted mechanic knows about your car. A mortgage broker willing to take the time to open the hood of your financial strengths while checking under the engine for costly money leaks. Make sure your mortgage broker has the experience, integrity, and know-how to provide you the optimal financial tune-up for your particular circumstances. Giving you staying power over the long haul and the capacity to take advantage of life's opportunities as they chance to appear.
Hi, I'm Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage in Salinas. Let me help you fine-tune your future real estate plans. The price of gasoline is through the roof, but interest rates are still near all-time lows. Don't let this opportunity pass you by. Give me a call today at 757-0436. 757-0436. I'm Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage and looking forward to working with you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Chris Mavridis. It was the moment of the 1971 Major League All-Star Game. Reggie Jackson belts one high and play-by-play man Kurt Gowdy calling it on NBC.
There's a long drive. That one is going way up. It is off the roof.
One of countless calls made by the legendary sports announcer. Today, Gowdy died of leukemia. He was 86. What made him so good?
Kurt Gowdy never had a shtick. He didn't have a call. He didn't have a way of drawing attention to himself. He often told me that, look, or worse than the game.
Sports author Kurt Smith says Gowdy was the man when it came to sports casting, and boy, did he know his stuff.
He had preparation and homework. He embodied the American work ethic. He once told me that in his primacy in the 1960s and 70s, he subscribed to and read 22 newspapers a day.
A funeral is planned for Saturday in Boston. Kurt Gowdy was 86. It's been a while since America's won any medal on this particular patch of ice.
A 30-year drought came to an end for the U.S. in ice dancing. The team of Tanith Belbin and Ben Augusto came through with a strong performance in the free dance. It was enough to get them a silver medal. In women's ice hockey, the U.S. team hoped to be in the gold medal game. Instead, the Americans had to settle for the bronze medal game, but they came through.
The Americans take home the bronze medal.
The call on Westwood One as the U.S. beats Finland 4-0 and gets the bronze. Steve Futterman, CBS News at the Winter Olympics in Torino.
It was the Canadian women's team that took gold in ice hockey, beating Sweden today 4-1. President Bush will tell you, when it comes to energy, we're all skating on thin ice.
The dependence upon oil is a national security problem and an economic security problem.
That's why this President's Day he hit the road, talking about his plan for new energy alternatives.
At a company working on lithium-ion batteries for hybrid cars, President Bush hailed the technology that will help America break its addiction to foreign oil.
If you're planning a trip to visit relatives, you can plug in your hybrid car the night before and drive the first 40 miles on your lithium-ion battery.
Pressing the case he made in his State of the Union address, Mr. Bush called for more aggressive development of ethanol and other alternative fuels, saying it will keep the U.S. from being held hostage by foreign oil producers that may not like the U.S. Mark Knoller, CBS News, with the president in Milwaukee.
They've been digging for days in the Philippines, looking for survivors from last week's landslide. But all they find are more bodies. 1,800 people are missing from that village. They think all of them are dead. Hope is running low in Mexico, where 65 miners remain trapped deep below the ground, trapped since a gas explosion in their mine yesterday. A handful did manage to make it out, but some were seriously hurt. This is CBS News.
What? Come on.
Mammoth Car Insurance Company.
Yes, I was just on your website
for
trying
a quote,
to...
Please visit us online at
On Progressive Direct's website, you can talk to a person, not a recording. When you're getting a car insurance quote at Progressive.com, you can click on the Talk to Me button, and we'll call you right then to help finish your quote or answer your questions. So get a quote the easy way at Progressive.com. Available in most states and situations. Progressive Health and Insurance Company and its affiliates, Nathan Village, Ohio.
Tiger Balm presents Jerry Rice.
Starting at wide receiver.
I'm ready for some football.
All-time record holder and Tiger Balm's biggest fan.
Huh?
Especially Tiger Balm's new pain-relieving patch.
The patch works for me.
Just apply the advanced hydrogel patch and Tiger Balm goes deep. Deep into aching muscles and joints. Tiger Balm's been around almost as long as...
Hey, watch it, pal.
Number 80, Jerry Rice.
Take a tip from me. Go for the balm, Tiger Balm, and put the tiger in your team.
Available at drugstores everywhere.
It was quiet on Wall Street today. The markets were closed for the President's Day holiday. Oh, sorry. That's for me. I got to get it. Let me just put you on hold here for a second. What? Not a fan of the Muzak version of YMCA? Then you should call Seattle.
I'm Heather Bosch in Seattle, where the city utility is getting rid of the standard hold music. Callers instead will listen to local artists. The city plans to rotate a variety of music through and let you know where you can purchase it if you want to hear more than what you experienced while on hold. Heather Bosch for CBS News, Seattle.
In the days and weeks following Hurricane Katrina, government promised New Orleans would rise again. But with hundreds of thousands of homes damaged and destroyed by the fierce waters right throughout Louisiana, that task would prove to be a pricey one. Today, Louisiana's governor unveiled her plan, which includes $150,000 buyouts for homeowners. Chris Mavridi, CBS News.
If you're living in a space that's too small or too large or too old or just too ugly, here's what you do. Take a 2x4 to the problem. Maybe some 2x6s. Heck, just take all your lumber and give it to a member of the American Institute of Architects. We'll design a home that fits your needs and your budget to a T. Call an AIA architect early, so your living space won't be too this or too that, but just right. AIA. Good design makes a difference. Visit AIA.org.
For the fans. This is for all of you out there who want to get a little closer to the 2006 U.S. Olympic team. We know you're a fan, and AT&T has put together a way for you to get to know Team USA. You can send personal best wishes and good luck messages to each of your favorite U.S. Olympic team members. Just visit att.com/teamusa and let AT&T deliver your support to the U.S. Olympic athletes in Torino. AT&T, proud sponsor of the 2006 U.S. Olympic team. Introducing the new AT&T. Your world delivered.
You've got the Peter B. Collins Show in your ear, on your dashboard, or whatever device you use. And I'm glad you're listening. We're live on KRXA 540, Monterey, Salinas, Santa Cruz, and Freedom. We're live on KGOE 1480, serving Eureka, Arcata, and Humboldt County. And this is our official Free Speech Zone, where we open up the lines to hear from you. You can call about any topic from any point of view. I haven't heard from Brian in Prunedale, our resident conservative, recently. Brian, bring it on. The lines are open for you right now. Central Coast, 831-899-5792. That's 899-KRXA. If you're listening in Eureka or on your computer, you can call me toll-free at 1-888-579-2540. 888-579-2540. And if you prefer email, you can drop me a note, Peter, at krxa540.com. You can also send a note to Peter at peterbcollins.com. It'll get to me eventually. And you are welcome to discuss any topic, including the powerful first-person accounts that we heard from Mark Manning and from our earlier guest, Rita Leisner, about life under U.S. occupation in Iraq. We also talked with Jamo Foser about media issues, including the population of the Sunday talk shows, more con than ever. And also we talked about the lame coverage of Dick Cheney's hunting accident. So any of those issues up for grabs, and I'm going to throw two or three more out here and see what interests you, what causes you to call up and talk with me. One of the issues that has built up steam just over the last few days is this proposed deal that would permit a company called Dubai Ports World to manage U.S. ports in New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore, and other major seaports in these United States. And it turns out that Dubai Ports World is owned free and clear by the government of the Gulf Emirate nation of Dubai. Now, I've never been to Dubai, and I really don't know what Dubai's posture is to the United States, toward the terrorist groups that have targeted us and appear to continue to do so. But I have to say that I am highly skeptical of this deal. And the way it's working is Dubai Ports World has offered to pay $6.8 billion to acquire a British company called Peninsular and Oriental Steam Navigation Company. And their subsidiary, P&O Ports North America, operates the facilities in the United States. And it's interesting to note that in mid-January, and this is the first I've heard of it, President Bush nominated a senior executive of Dubai Ports World, David Sanborn, to run the Department of Transportation's Maritime Administration. He had been running the company's operations in Europe and Latin America. And this makes me very suspicious, because as we know, the Bush family has a history of deep ties to governments in the Mideast, particularly in oil-producing countries like Saudi Arabia. And I'm one of those people, while again, I don't know the exact posture of the government of Dubai towards Americans and the United States government, it just doesn't smell right. Now, to be fair, the company that was managing our ports up until this sale was announced was British. So, for some time, we have outsourced the management of our ports. And maybe the Bush administration says, hey, the British, the Dubais, what's the difference? But this appointment by President Bush of David Sanborn, when you add it together with the news that's been revealed over the last week or so about P&O Ports, it just smacks of cronyism and poor judgment. So, if you have a comment on that, I'd like to hear from you. 831-899-5792 or toll free 888-579-2540. Here's an article from the Boston Globe today. Democrats may unite on plan to pull troops. After months of trying unsuccessfully to develop a common message on the war in Iraq, Democratic Party leaders are beginning to coalesce around a broad plan to begin a quick withdrawal of U.S. troops and install them elsewhere in the region. The concept, dubbed strategic redeployment, first surfaced last fall. And if you're a regular listener to the Peter B. Collins Show, you know all about it. It was written by Lawrence J. Korb, who is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. And he and a colleague, in different interviews, appeared on our program and talked about, number one, that U.S. troops are stretched way too thin in the Middle East right now, and that we are, as Jack Murtha has pointed out, targets, that we are more the problem than the solution in Iraq today. Howard Dean, the DNC chairman, has endorsed Korb's paper and begun mentioning it in meetings with local Democratic groups. And Dean said, we're not going to cut and run, that's just Republican propaganda. But we are going to redeploy our troops so they don't have targets on their backs and they're not breaking down doors and putting themselves in the line of fire all the time. It's a sensible plan, it's a thoughtful plan. I think Democrats can coalesce around it. Now, the point man for the Democrats in trying to find a common position on Iraq is Senator Jack Reed of Rhode Island. He's a veteran and a cautious, fairly conservative Democrat. And I have tweaked him in the past because after Jack Murtha floated his plan in November, Reed was one of the people who went on TV and said he didn't support it, and then he used the Republican language, framing, and talking points to attack Congressman Murtha's proposal. He referred to it as precipitous withdrawal at the time. Now Reed says it's important to note that it's not withdrawal, it's redeployment. We need a strategy that we can pursue that is going to accomplish the reasonable objectives and allow us to have strategic flexibility. Not only is it a message, but it's a method to improve the security there and around the globe. So I consider this a hopeful development. I would like to see the Democrats coalesce around a more aggressive position with a strong contrast to the White House bland stay the course and its unexplained strategy for victory. But I do consider this to be hopeful progress. Your comments, I'd like to hear from you. 831-899-5792 Central Coast, or toll free at 888-579-2540. And now for something completely different. I want to know if you get as much of this come on spam as I do. And I'm going to briefly breeze through two of them that came today. They're all similar, and they all originate in the southern part of Africa. Dear beloved, and I'm going to read this as it's written verbatim so that you can feel the bad grammar for yourself. I am wife of sacked Deputy President of South Africa, Mr. Jacob Zuma. It is out of desperation that I am sending you this mail. My husband and I need your assistance in fronting for us as owner of funds that are his, which might come under investigation soon if the fund's ownership is not changed soonest. As my husband's finances are increasingly becoming the source of investigation by our detractors. But she said distractors. The source of these funds, which my husband's earnings would not validate, will further sink him into the cesspool dug by our enemies. Now, this suggests that this deposed deputy president of South Africa has a bunch of illegal money that they're about to discover. And she wants me to help him out. It is because of the dire strait we find ourselves that we resolve to reach you and ask for your assistance in this matter. We are averse to letting those who know here into this deal... those we know here into this deal because we are no longer sure of who our friends are. You will be handsomely rewarded if you choose to help us partner-hip this project. Best regards, Lindewi Zuma. Oh, and by the way, do well not to disclose the contents of this mail to anyone. Oops. All right, there's one more that just came in moments ago from Bar Matthew. Dear friend, I am Barrister Ted Nwoko, the personal attorney to foreign contractor who worked with the multinational oil firm in Nigeria. On the 11th of September 2001, my client, a Mexican national, an oil merchant and contractor with the federal government of Nigeria until his death in a ghastly terrorist attack to American Airlines Flight 11. All occupants fortunately lost their lives. Since then, I have made several inquiries to several embassies to locate any of my client's extended relatives. This has also proved unsuccessful. After these several unsuccessful attempts, I decided to trace his relatives over the Internet to locate any member of his family, but to no avail. Hence, contacted you. What? Hence? So, then he goes into a whole laundry list of instructions here. I seek your consent to present you as the next of kin to the deceased so that the proceeds of this account, valued at $10 million U.S., will be paid to you, and then you and I can share this money. 60% to me, 40% to you. All I require is your honest and cooperation to enable us see this deal through. I guarantee this will be executed under a legitimate arrangement that will protect you from any breach of the law. And so I am supposed to respond to this email and give him the full names and beneficiary's name, my contact address, the bank, and the bank account details, complete address of the bank, my private phone and fax numbers, and then I'm going to send a reply to his private email, which is at Yahoo. So I want to know if you get any of these and if you know anybody who has responded. Of course, nobody who listens to our program would be dumb enough to do it yourself, but maybe you know someone who has. So those are the topics I'm working this hour. My lines are wide open to hear from you. It's a holiday, so if you're a first-time caller, get up your nerve, get on the line, and let's talk about it here on the Peter B. Collins Show. 831-899-KRXA or 888-579-2540. It's 518, and this is the Peter B. Collins Show.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
I'm Scott Dick, your host of the Tasty Planet Show. Saturdays from 1 to 3 p.m., we'll explore Monterey Bay regional wine and food, markets, restaurants, menus, and prices. I'll interview winemakers, chefs, and other key players. We'll put food and wine together, and then we'll take them apart. If it's handcrafted beer or goat's milk and it's good, let's talk about it. Join me every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. to discuss food, wine, and fun in the Monterey Bay region, an especially delicious slice of our Tasty Planet. Sponsored in part by Kitchen Studio.
Attention antiquarians. The Monterey Peninsula is one of the best places in the country to go antiquing. And the two best stores on the peninsula to shop for beautiful, unique, and precious items are the Monterey Antique and Gift Center in Monterey and Holman's Antique Plaza in Pacific Grove. Are you looking for a discontinued china piece to complete the wedding set you started many years ago? How about a genuine gold pocket watch with the original movement? Does authentic frontier art appeal to you? If so, you must spend a few hours browsing at the Monterey Antique and Gift Center in downtown Monterey and Holman's Antique Plaza in Pacific Grove. For the finest antiques, collectibles, and jewelry, there's no place like the Monterey Antique and Gift Center, 449 Alvarado Street, and Holman's Antique Plaza at 542 Lighthouse in Pacific Grove.
Owner Nader Aga looks forward to serving you at one of his beautiful and unique shops, the Monterey Antique and Gift Center on Alvarado and Holman's Antique Plaza in Pacific Grove.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. We know that our children learn by playing, and the caring staff at Thinker Toys will help you choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. Stop by our beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos and the just renovated Thinker Toys at Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily from 10 to 7.
KRXA 540 checks your traffic on this Monday afternoon. Here's Nate Samuels.
Well, kind of a strange situation going on in South San Jose. Southbound 101 near Highway 85, CHP reporting we have a person in a dirt area just off the roadway hitting golf balls towards the lanes. Definitely drive with caution. They're on the way down there to look for that guy and tell him to move on. Ajaro, San Juan Road at Salinas Road, an accident. Vehicle into a power pole. That vehicle overturned and went into a field. It looks like there's actually no injuries there. We do have some lines down off to the shoulder. Emergency crews and PG&E are on the scene. Santa Cruz Mountains, Loma Prieta Avenue at Summit Road, an injury crash, a vehicle that went down an embankment. This has actually been out there quite a while. Pretty remote area. The tow truck still on the way out there to try to find this. This is brought to you by ChapStick. Now's a good time to glide on ChapStick Lip Moisturizer. ChapStick refreshes your lips' natural balance so they feel soft and supple. Keep your lips ChapStick healthy. Nate Samuels with traffic on KRXA 540.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
We got a president so bad, gotta be the worst we ever had. Got the job 'cause of his dad, now we're all in danger.
Yeah, you know, dependence on oil is a national security problem, and the president just figured that out.
Struts all around like a hood, got us in a world of trouble. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning. Compassionate conservative, my ass, in executions unsurpassed, surplus gone so fast, divided, not united. What's he wanna do now? What's he gonna try? Does he really think Armageddon is nigh? Does he care if children die? La 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 la. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning. We'll all feel better in the morning.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. We're in the free speech zone, and the switchboard's kind of quiet today. We've got a caller on the line we'll get to in just a second, but there's room for you to join us. And I particularly want to invite first-time callers. I know a lot of you listen, and don't get your nerve up or you think it'll take too long. If you call us, we'll get you on and off the air in 5 or 10 minutes. And I'd love to hear from some new voices out there. 831-899-5792, Central Coast. That's a local call, 899-KRXA. Or toll free at 888-579-2540. That's 888-579-2540. Yeah, the president's barnstorming the country as if he's been driving hybrids for years. And he stated today that dependence on foreign oil is a national security problem. And this is news to the president. Something that we've known for a long, long time. John Kerry attempted to articulate it in the 2004 campaign. But it's just a talking point. He's not really serious, you know. Speaking of oil, tomorrow, California State Controller and candidate for Governor Steve Westley will be convening a meeting in Pacific Grove. It's at 11 a.m. in the council chambers. And he also, as part of his job as State Controller, is chair of the State Lands Commission. And he is convening a public meeting on the impacts of oil drilling and other activities off our coast. As you may know, legislation has been announced by our senators to restrict permanently ban offshore drilling on the Pacific coast. And so this is a very timely issue as people like Richard Pombo are trying to make leasing possible again. And, of course, the Gulf Coast is an area where it's expected that more of those platforms will develop. But Steve Westley in tomorrow, and we hope that he's going to join us on our program tomorrow. We think 3:30 is the proposed time, but we'll find out when we find out. That's Steve Westley, candidate for governor, state controller, and chair of the State Lands Commission, a public meeting at the Pacific Grove City Hall tomorrow at 11. Peter B. is on the line. Hello, sir. You're on the air on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Peter, another four-star program. Your first two guests, that it was just riveting. Again, the quality just never ceases to amaze me, Peter.
Well, thank you. And I was very impressed by both of our guests who talked about Iraq, Rita Leissner and Mark Manning. And I just think it's so important to get these perspectives because they are completely absent from the American media.
I was going to say that I very much doubt they're going to be guests on the Fox News Network.
No, they have yet to be invited.
Peter, I wanted to bring to your attention today my weekly 1984 George Orwell Award going to the U.S. Geological Society and their report on the Yucca Mountain nuclear waste dump.
Oh, Peter, you're doing so well there. Please repeat after me. Nuclear.
Nuclear.
There is no such word as nuclear unless you're a dumbass from Texas.
Oh, well, I was trying to be politically correct, but again, I'm sure, Peter, you're aware of the storyline on that, where their report, several million dollars into it, was deemed fictitious, yet close enough to factual.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Yucca Mountain is problematic. It's too close to Las Vegas. There is no protection for the groundwater system from contamination, from radioactivity. When we attempt to store used nukes and spent fuel rods and that sort of thing there. And what's interesting to me, Peter, is I've seen a resurgence of positive talk about nuclear power plants in this country.
Yes.
And they completely bypass the nuclear waste issue. And they try to sell it to us now, get this, as a response to global warming. And, of course, this isn't official. It's not coming from the administration. But I've seen a number of op-eds in the last 6 months or so from people who have science-y credentials and aren't too truthful who want to tell us, gosh, you know, I mean, there hasn't been an accident since Three Mile Island and Chernobyl. And the nuclear industry in this country has a really good safety record. And, gosh, we've got to reduce our dependence on coal-fired power plants. Well, I could go along with that if they were honest about the nuclear waste issue. And they're not. And we have not come one step closer to solving that problem in the last 20 years. And so, for me, there is no green light for more nuclear power in this country.
Well, remember, Peter, a green
I'll tell you
light...
what, Peter, if you got more to say, we'll hold you over the break. We'll return in just a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Join R.J. Moyer for his new weekend show about college funding this Saturday at 10 a.m. on KRXA 540. R.J. Moyer brings to the microphone a unique perspective on the benefits of a college education, and he shares with you his knowledge on how to substantially reduce your out-of-pocket college expenses.
This is R.J. Moyer. Join me for About College Funding, Saturday morning at 10 on KRXA 540, sponsored in part by The Potting Shed in Aptos.
Are you having a problem making your home loan payments? Do you have equity to protect? At your wit's end, trying to figure out how you'll be able to keep your home? Would you like to speak to a highly qualified loan agent who does not charge for advice? Hi, I'm John Sullivan of Executive Financial Services in Salinas. We can advise you about negotiating with your lender, and believe me, most lenders would rather negotiate with you than own your home. We can advise you about the foreclosure process and bankruptcy filings. If you need us, you can call us 7 days a week between 10 and 7 at 443-7277. We personally answer the phone and don't pre-screen our calls. We're here to give you advice. We can give you your options 5 minutes after reviewing your credit report. We might be able to help you. We might not be able to help you. But if you never call us, you'll never know. That's 443-7277 for a 5-minute solution. Executive Financial Services at 443-7277.
I am Attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience, who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience. I'm honest. My prices are affordable and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
This is it. This is the world we live in. What are we going to do about it? It's time to stop picking parasites off your friend's hairy back and become an engaged cerebral citizen. Yes, there is more to American youth culture than McDonald's, malls, MySpace, and corporate monopolies. We have got to do better than the current apes that are in the process of turning this country into a banana republic. But we need your help. Call in, tell your friends, and listen to The Naked Ape, Sundays on KRXA.
Listen live, Sundays from 12 to 1 p.m.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, and we're halfway through our free speech zone on this holiday Monday. Which president are you celebrating? My lines are open for you at 831-899-5792, 831-899-KRXA. You can also call me toll-free if you're listening in Eureka or on your computer or somewhere out in the ozone. It's 888-579-2540. That's 888-579-2540. And I want to toss out another subject for us to chew on and for you to talk about. And I will acknowledge that this is complex and presents some ethical dilemmas, at least for people who don't have a clear position on capital punishment. I am morally opposed to any execution conducted by the state of California, or any state for that matter, but this is where I live. And about 6.5 hours from now, they're going to strap a guy named Michael Morales onto the gurney in the death chamber at San Quentin, and they're going to kill him. He's convicted of a grisly crime, and I make no apology or explanation for the behavior of a criminal. In this case, I don't have a great deal of sympathy for Michael Morales. He appears to be guilty of the crimes he's been convicted of, and his appeals have all run their course. But I believe that any execution is immoral, and that on a practical level, it achieves almost nothing. And to complicate this issue, there have been a spate of suits by death row inmates recently challenging the method of execution. And as you may know, California uses lethal injections. We stopped using the gas chamber many years ago, although the events take place in the gas chamber room at San Quentin. And because of serious questions that have been raised, not only in California, but that have been brought to the attention of the U.S. Supreme Court, the Supreme Court has recently issued a number of remarkable stays of execution to block executions because of the method. The idea of the lethal injection has been challenged as cruel, unusual, and inhumane. We saw the case of Stanley Tookie Williams, the Crips founder who claims he had the change of heart in prison, started to write kids' books and urge people to stay out of gangs. They couldn't find a vein. And it appears that he went through a significant amount of pain as they attempted to execute him. The next case was a 76-year-old man who required a double dose. Even though he was quite infirm and there had been doubts that he could even get out of his wheelchair and up onto the table where they killed him. And so the court that reviewed the case of Michael Morales, who is scheduled to be executed tonight just after midnight, said, well, it would be more humane and less cruel if we bring in an anesthesiologist who puts him to sleep before we put him to death. Some people might react to this and say, well, gosh, if we're going to kill him, Let's do it as gently as possible, and this makes sense to me. Well, I don't buy it. And part of it is my bias, that I don't accept the notion that capital punishment is justified to begin with. I'll admit my bias. But there's more to it. We're crossing a line. If a medical doctor, an anesthesiologist, does show up at San Quentin tonight and participate in this process, it will cross a line that, so far, to my knowledge, has not been crossed before. And that is a medical doctor who took the Hippocratic Oath to do no harm will be asked to put this guy to sleep before they put him to death. And my question to you is, could you be that anesthesiologist? Could you detach yourself and perform this function and put Michael Morales to sleep the way you have hundreds of patients for surgery, hundreds of people who are recovering from accidents and have to go under the knife? Could you do that? I could not. And my reasons are clear. But you might be one of those people whom I respect who has a different point of view. You may believe that capital punishment, at least in certain cases, is warranted, and that it is an appropriate function of state government. And if you believe that, I encourage you to call today, and I will not ridicule you, but I want to ask you a couple of deep moral questions. Could you be that doctor? And could you live with yourself if you applied the anesthesia that permitted the state of California to kill Michael Morales without his feeling any pain? Tough questions? I'd like to hear from you. 831-899-5792 or toll-free 888-579-2540. Ben from Salinas, thanks for holding. You're next here on the PBC show.
Good afternoon, sir. You got to know they're going to give that $69 billion for the war in Iraq, right?
$69 billion, that's a new number. We got a request for $80 billion the day after the State of the Union message.
And that'll just carry it through November. Okay, now we have a Congress of cowards that will not protect the national treasure from being looted. They won't stop our young people from dying in a war of occupation in Iraq. They're letting the Medicare system eat up money and now causing the deaths of many elderly disabled here in America. What will these people fight for? Let me give you a scenario, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
Dubai, that country that is now in control of the five most important ports in the eastern seaboard in America, the country we love.
Not yet, but they're planning it.
Okay, now, this is an Arab country, right, which means the larger percentage of them is probably Muslim, right?
You know, I don't know that, and I don't want to jump to that conclusion. You're correct. It's one of the Arab Emirates,
yep.
And I think that you could correctly suspect. But I don't know the religious makeup of the small nation of Dubai.
Well, to many dumbass Americans, when you say Arab, Muslim, or you get into that vein, they consider them all someone to be nuked and, you know, disregard them. They're two-thirds of the Muslims are two-thirds of the damn world. One of these dumbass Republicans, I got a scenario for you. They float a ship into one of these harbors that is now under Arab control, and they don't even have to, it doesn't have to go through customs. All they got to do is shoot off, let go right there in the harbor, or perish the thought they find some aluminum tubes, and it happens to be around November of 2006. Well, now we can prohibit all public gatherings and declare martial law, and we'll never be rid of these Nazis in the White House. And
well,
how many of these, how many of that $80 billion they're asking for this illegal war of occupation? We just had 50,000 Ford employees, 25,000 GE employees, and God knows how many of the people losing their jobs. How much? What would $69 billion do for them? Not to mention the people of New Orleans, my fellow Americans. And how many of you people that are watching this happen to our country? And I see you people, mostly the rednecks from the red states. How many of you are dumbass Republicans that is for these Nazis? Now, I wish Crying Brian from Prunedale, who loves to cry for Bush, call up Brian. Let's see if you got the gonads to defend your little pipsqueak in the White House there with your snooveling point of view. Peter, are we going to save our country or not?
I hope we can.
Thank you, sir.
Working on it every day. Thank you, Ben. I just Googled Dubai and Muslims. And I got a piece here that appears to be some kind of pro-tourist information. Dubai women are shrouded head to toe in black, their faces veiled often entirely to shield them from the gaze of any man other than their husbands. Since so many residents and visitors to Dubai come from other parts of the Arab world, there's an endless variety of national dress seen particularly in the souks, African Muslim women wrapped in gowns similar to those of the Dubai women, only these are bright colors. So, I'll have to do a little more research here. While Dubai is very much an Arab state with Islam as its official religion, comparisons with any other country on the Arabian Peninsula end there. It is, by any measure, a liberal society, rated as among the safest in the world. There are no beggars, no homeless, no poverty, no religion police imposing their rule on the hapless female visitor who happens to wear shorts or a halter top out in public. But a visitor certainly wouldn't find any adult bookstores in town. Well, that leaves the strong impression that it is a Muslim nation. Now, that by itself does not make Dubai an enemy of the United States or our citizens. But it raises a huge red flag about the wisdom of permitting the government of Dubai, through a company that it completely owns, to purchase the British company, P&O, whatever they are. Here it is, P&O Ports North America, for $6.8 billion. And this suggests that we have great confidence in their ability to manage the ports and to keep them safe. I'm pretty skeptical here. Let me know what you think. We're going to take a quick break and return with more of your calls in the Free Speech Zone here. There's a line open for you on the Central Coast at 831-899-5792. Eureka, you can call me toll-free right now. 1-888-579-2540. It's 545. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. Imagine how nice it would be if your mortgage broker knew as much about the ins and outs of specialized lending programs as your trusted mechanic knows about your car. A mortgage broker willing to take the time to open the hood of your financial strengths while checking under the engine for costly money leaks. Make sure your mortgage broker has the experience, integrity, and know-how to provide you the optimal financial tune-up for your particular circumstances. Giving you staying power over the long haul and the capacity to take advantage of life's opportunities as they chance to appear.
Hi, I'm Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage in Salinas. Let me help you fine-tune your future real estate plans. The price of gasoline is through the roof, but interest rates are still near all-time lows. Don't let this opportunity pass you by. Give me a call today at 757-0436. 757-0436. I'm Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage and looking forward to working with you.
There are radio talk shows about sports, politics, money, sex, and religion. Now there's a talk show for parents and everyone else who cares for and about children. It's Childhood Matters, every Sunday from 9 to 10 a.m. here on KRXA 540. I'm the host, Rona Renner, the mother of four, a new grandmother, a nurse, and parent educator. Listen and call in Childhood Matters every Sunday from 9 to 10 here on KRXA 540.
Hi, this is KRXA 540 News anchor Casey Lynch, inviting you to join us for a new program, Coach Casey's Call, Saturday mornings from 11 to noon. The show is dedicated to promoting local athletes and the teams they compete for. Coach Casey's Call features in-studio guests as well as listener phone calls, giving you an opportunity to join in the discussion and support the local sports scene. Join us Saturday mornings, 11 to noon, here on KRXA 540 AM for Coach Casey's Call.
checks your traffic on this holiday Monday afternoon. Here's Nate Samuels, Metro Traffic.
We do have a couple of new problems to tell you about. Santa Clara County, this is the Pacheco Pass, 152 at Bell Station. Injury crash, a solo vehicle spun out into the center divide and went up an embankment. Looks like emergency crews are on the scene. For Gilroy, South 101 after Maston Avenue, we have a vehicle that hit the center divide. It's now up against the center divide wall. CHP is on the scene. A tow truck has been dispatched to the area. Earlier problem, Loma Prieta Avenue at Summit Road. It's an injury crash, solo vehicle down an embankment. They're still waiting for a tow truck to arrive there. And crews are clearing an earlier crash, Pajaro, San Juan Road at Salinas Road. This was a car that hit a power pole. This is brought to you by your genuine Toyota service departments. Toyota owners, right now you're participating. Genuine Toyota Service Center is giving away gas cards worth up to $20 with qualifying service or tire purchases. Restrictions apply. See dealer for details. Nate Samuels with traffic on KRXA 540.
Got to turn the microphone on, Pete. It's the Peter B. Collins Show, our final segment here, the home stretch of the Free Speech Zone. And there's still room for your call, 831-899-5792, or toll-free at 888-579-2540. I'd love to hear you comment on the complex moral question I proposed. If you were an anesthesiologist and you were asked to go to San Quentin tonight to put to sleep Michael Morales before the state puts him to death, could you do it? And could you sleep at night if you did? I'd like to hear your comments. Jim in McKinleyville is next. Hi, Jim. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show. Doing okay today. Thank you.
Fine. Nice sunshine, huh?
Oh, yeah. It's nice. Things are warming up, and there's been some snow on the peaks around the Bay Area the last few days.
Yeah, well, it takes a couple hours for it to warm up, but at any rate, you know, it's about this port thing.
Yeah.
I believe it's payback for 9/11.
Okay, explain.
Well, you know, they needed somebody to do it, and now they're paying them off for doing it.
Well, I still don't understand. You're saying that the people who perpetrated 9/11 are getting a payback through this contract to run the ports?
Sure.
Well, what connection do you draw between the 9/11 attacks and the nation of Dubai?
Well, is blood real thick? You know, it's like if you have a couple of people that, or 19 people that are from that area, and it doesn't make any difference where they're from, you know.
Oh, Jim, see, I'm sorry to hear you say that, because that's like saying that people from California are exactly the same as people from Oregon or Nevada just because they happen to be in the same general area. You know, it's, in my view, if we can come up with solid information that connects people in Dubai to the financing, to money laundering, to any of the schemes that led to 9/11, I'm open to hearing that. And in fact, we are looking for information right now. Matt, my producer, just put an item on the screen that two of the 9/11 hijackers were from Dubai. That's news to me. I knew that 15 of them were from Saudi Arabia, and I knew that none came from Iraq or Afghanistan. So I've got a little more work to do on that side. This citation here is from the New York Daily News. But at this point, I don't have enough information to, you know, draw the kind of conclusion that you have. And I want to be clear that I don't dismiss for a moment the serious questions that continue to linger about what truly happened on 9/11. There are myriad stories we've been told that simply aren't true, whether it's Building 7, Flight 93. They just had a made-for-TV movie about Flight 93 to reinforce the stories of the heroic efforts of passengers. And sadly, I think that that is a cover story. I believe that plane was shot down. But I don't have enough information at this point to make a direct link between Dubai and 9/11. Jim, you still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
You know, it's like, that's my belief. You know, I wouldn't put it past Bush. I wouldn't put it past any of his cronies. You know, it's, hey, you do this favor for us, we'll do this favor for you.
Well, Jim, I hear your point of view. I'm not prepared to go that far at this point. With all the questions that have been raised, I still am not prepared to say that Bush caused 9/11 or permitted it to happen.
I know. You're not into the conspiracy thing, right?
Well, I don't say that either, because David Ray Griffin put it very accurately. We've been told a story that's a conspiracy theory. So now we're just arguing over which one is accurate.
Yeah, right. Well, time will tell, huh?
All right, Jim.
Hey, the other thing is, how long has that guy been in prison?
Morales?
Yeah.
I think the crime was committed in the mid-'80s.
Yeah, how long was McVeigh in prison?
Before he was executed?
Yeah.
About a year and a half.
Yeah. They want to get rid of his ass right quick, huh?
Well, and there are murky lingering stories about what really happened in Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
I don't believe that Timothy McVeigh was the beginning and end of that plot. And I know some investigators who worked on not his defense, but his co-defendant's defense. And all I can tell you is that the stories don't add up completely. And the government worked very quickly to nail McVeigh with the Oklahoma City bombing. He was clearly involved. I don't dispute that for a moment.
Oh, there's no doubt about that.
But I don't think he acted alone.
No, and nobody else has answered for it, but some guy is going to spend, what, his life in prison?
Yeah.
I can't remember his name right now.
Well, Jim, tell me this. Could you be the anesthesiologist at San Quentin tonight?
No, you know what? You know, what did he do? He choked that gal?
It was worse than that. It was a rape.
And a choke.
And a murder, yes.
Yeah. Well, maybe choke him to death. Get one of those guards out there and just, hey, you know.
That's kind of biblical, Jim.
I know it is. You know, an eye for an eye and a... You know,
and a choke for a
you
choke.
Know, thieves used to have their hands cut off,
mm-hmm.
and they always cut the hand off on the left side because that's the one they wipe with. You get the gist?
I do.
Okay.
So
hey,
you
thanks, man.
So, Jim, do I take it that you support capital punishment?
It's real hard for me to... sometimes I do, sometimes I don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like if the last guy that was writing books, prison is supposed to be for rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like to me that he did. So...
You're talking about Tukey Williams?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Why put that talent to death?
Mm-hmm.
But
in the case of Morales, you see no redeeming qualities, and therefore the execution should go forward.
I'm not sure about the guy because I don't know the story behind that.
Mm-hmm.
It's what are you going to do? I think life in prison is much worse than letting a guy out by death.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what they're doing. They're freeing him.
Mm-hmm.
And, it seems to me that life in prison is one hell of a long, retribution.
But. Yeah, I hear you. But are you troubled at all by the idea that a medical doctor will be asked to
put
this guy
to
sleep?
I am, because it doesn't become the, what do you call it, the hypocritical or what?
Hippocratic oath, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It becomes hypocritical.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jim. So, thanks for the call today. Nice to talk with you. That's Jim in McKinleyville. Why don't we lighten up just a little bit? We can't be serious all the time. Kenny Ruther sends me emails with jokes. True medical embarrassments. We'll see how much we have time for. A man came into the ER and yelled, "My wife's going to have her baby in the cab." I grabbed my stuff, rushed out to the cab, lifted the lady's dress, began to take off her underwear. Suddenly, I noticed there were several cabs, and I was in the wrong one. That's from a doctor, San Antonio, Texas. While acquainting myself with a new elderly patient, I asked, "How long have you been bedridden?" After a look of complete confusion, she answered, "Why, not for about 20 years when my husband was alive." That's from a doctor in Corvallis, Oregon. As a new young MD doing his residency in OB, I was quite embarrassed when performing female pelvic exams. To cover my embarrassment, I had unconsciously formed a habit of whistling softly. The middle-aged lady upon whom I was performing this exam suddenly burst out laughing and further embarrassing me. I looked up from my work and sheepishly said, "I'm sorry, was I tickling you?" And she said, "No, doctor, but the song you were whistling was, 'I wish I was an Oscar Mayer wiener.'" Another one. At the beginning of my shift, I placed a stethoscope on an elderly and slightly deaf female patient's anterior chest wall. "Big breaths," I instructed. "Yes, they used to be," replied the patient. One day I had to be the bearer of bad news when I told a wife that her husband had died of a massive myocardial infarction. That's hard. Not more than 5 minutes later, I heard her reporting to the rest of the family that he had died of a massive internal fart. Well, fortunately, that's all we have time for today. From the annals of medical something. Thanks for joining us on the program today. Coming up tomorrow, we expect Steve Wesley, candidate for governor in the Democratic primary in June, and currently the state controller, to join us about 3:30. That should be interesting, and I hope you'll tune in. I'm Peter B. Collins. This program's produced by Matt Renner. And we'll be here again tomorrow from 3 to 6. I hope you will, too.
I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I'll bring you interesting topics and personalities from the world of food, wine, and fun. Guests on the Tasty Planet have included wine experts, winemakers, restaurateurs, famous chefs, and others that have made the Monterey Bay region such a delicious slice of our Tasty Planet. Sponsored in part by PG Liquors at 229 Grand in Pacific Grove. Stop by today for all your quality beverage needs and ask them about their single malt scotch tasting on March 22nd. And tell them the Tasty Planet sent you.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540.
If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Chris Mavridis. The last time the Americans won a medal in ice dancing, fans were honking the horn in their brand new AMC Pacer.
There was some good news and some bad news for the U.S. on Monday. The Americans won a silver in ice dance, the first Olympic medal of any kind in ice dance for the U.S. since 1976. The Americans also won a bronze in women's ice hockey as the U.S. beat Finland 4-0. The bad news came on the ski slopes. Bodie Miller came close but once again left empty-handed, finishing sixth in the giant slalom. Steve Futterman, CBS News, at the Winter Olympics in Torino.
Tomorrow, it's ladies figure skating, beginning with a short program. America's top hope is likely Sasha Cohen, now that Michelle Kwan is out with a pulled groin. Play-by-play man Kurt Gowdy called events at the 1976 Summer Games in Montreal, but he was likely best known for calling Major League Baseball.
There's a
long
drive.
Like this one. In the 1975 All-Star Game, Gowdy was also behind the mic for the first ever Super Bowl.
And here we go. And the Super Bowl is underway. When that ball is touched, the clock will officially start. Adderley on the sixth.
Kurt Gowdy died today in Florida following a battle with leukemia. He was 86. Back in the day, he was the man.
You couldn't watch network TV without seeing Gowdy in the 1960s and 70s.
Kurt Smith remembers, a sports author, he says,
if there was a sports event, Gowdy did it. If he didn't do it, it wasn't a major event.
The funeral is planned for Saturday in Boston, smooth as silk behind that mic. Kurt Gowdy was 86. Security at U.S. ports. It's been beefed up significantly since 9/11. Now some are wondering why Washington is outsourcing security at six major U.S. ports, all to an Arab company. Reporter Monica Miller says a New Jersey lawmaker wants it stopped now.
Senator Bob Menendez is asking President Bush to stop a United Arab Emirates-run company from taking over six U.S. ports.
Two of the 9/11 hijackers were from the United Arab Emirates.
And according to the 9/11 Commission report, not because I say it, but the bipartisan, unanimous report of the 9/11 Commission said it has been a financial base for Al-Qaeda.
If the deal isn't frozen or negated, Senator Menendez says he and Senator Hillary Clinton will push for legislation so it doesn't happen again.
Before it happened, there were 1,800 people in that village in the Philippines. Now, days after that landslide, they're all